ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling, OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
The Beast, the Man.
You gotta beat the Man.
Whoa. It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
And this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake, the heavens opened up, and God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki, is it? It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the folks here, the Wild Talk Radio Network, onlineworldofwrestling.com. The toll-free number is sponsored by Underground Radio, which is 877-588-9877. It is option one. If you're hip to the Skype network, you can use Sir Rockin. He is our tech producer and master of always survey in this land. And the music tonight is brought to us by Russell Talk Radio and Otaku Talk Live's Thug, who pitched an idea to me, and when we had Jerry Lynn on the program, they got into a discussion on the pre-Black Album Metallica versus the post-Black Album Metallica, and you can check our archive at owradio.com for that information. So thanks to the Spug guy, we have pre-Black Album Metallica, which is really cool. We opened earlier with Battery, which if you've never seen Metallica in concert, damn, that song is cool live. I got to see them on their 04 St. Anger tour with Godsmack opening for them, and when they did Battery, it was just like, okay, I need sunglasses from the pyro going off in here. And that was also Fight Fire with Fire Off, Ride the Lightning. So we'll be playing stuff from Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, and Justice for All.
Where which a lot is of their people, best album.
But people also say they sold out a little bit because they finally went and did a music video for one. But as many people will say, including you, Jerry Lynn has said it, and I'm sure when Vito DiNucci of Between the Ropes, which is normally heard in the Orlando area, he's also a former three-time world tag team champion, attended the same concert I did, he will tell you that Metallica was the best band that MTV had never dared to have on their airwaves until they did the video for One.
Well, One was an awesome video, but Injustice for All quite possibly was their best album ever.
Oh, absolutely. I can't argue with you on that one.
I own, I'm not going to lie, I own every Metallica album, including post-Black Album. I do own St. Anger, although it never gets played.
It just sits there on the shelf?
Yeah, it just sits there in my CD case and never gets played. I do own Death Magnetic, which I think I played like twice. I'm not a real big fan. It's just so forced. Like, the anger is so forced now. You listen to Injustice for All, you listen to Harvester of Sorrow, which many people think was about a farmer who went nuts. It's not. It's an anti-abortion song. You listen to Blackened, which is about nuclear winter.
They were very music-driven on that. They were very motive, story-driven, so to speak.
There's not a song on that album under 5 minutes.
Oh,
under
yeah.
5 minutes.
And there's never an interview on this network that's under, on this show that's under 5 minutes, unless you're Cole Cabana, and then we wanted to end that one really fast. Before we get too out of control here tonight, during the 10 p.m. hour, there was a sad thing happened this past weekend. We had the death of another wrestling promotion. This one is New England Championship Wrestling. So if you live in the Northeast area, you possibly have seen them on Comcast Sports On Demand and on through their website, NECW Wrestling. And due to personal issues between the owners of the company, they shut their doors this weekend temporarily. Wrestling historian and former owner and booker and promoter of that company, Sheldon Goldberg, will join us. If the name sounds familiar, he's been in documentaries on wrestling. He's done tons of appearances all over the place. So he will be joining us, and as mentioned, Vito DiNucci of the Heavenly Bodies, three-time NWA World Tag Team Champion, who's been here before, called in to Punk, the Dark City Fight Club, the night they were on. And as mentioned, he is a part of the Between the Ropes program out of Orlando. They were dark tonight, so I made the first phone call and said, hey, Vito, you want to come on and talk some wrestling? Also joining us is a man who... I couldn't believe it. Actually praised Team 3D this past Sunday night on Wrestle Talk Radio. Mace is joining us. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, technically, good afternoon. It is 1 p.m. in the afternoon, and I just finished lunch.
And we're proud. Yeah.
What I have? Cup noodles. Pre-show. Tradition, I suppose.
There you go.
So I believe we have... Much wrestling to talk about, including some interesting changes in TNA, Alan.
Oh, baby, we'll talk about a couple of the changes. First, we'll address the event that was Turning Point this past Sunday. Now, all of us, at one point or another, on Wrestle Talk Radio's show Sunday night, addressed this event. And as my opinion on it was a very mixed bag, where you had some phenomenal matches in... the Motor City Machine Guns in Team 3D, which is made to outline on the show the other night, could not have been a more old-school tag team match. And to see the Guns, who were normally a high-flying X-Division-style team, go out there and go with a team such as Team 3D, which they're 200-300-pound dudes, but in certain instances, you look at them and go, holy God, they move like cruiserweights in certain instances. And in my opinion, they stole the show. We'll get Bug and Mace's opinion and the fans' opinion in a moment. New X Division champion, unfortunately. Yep, Robbie E is your new World X Division champion. Thanks to a little help from Miss Cookie, he took out Jay Lethal. Bye-bye, Sabu. He is gone. He was the man who was pinned in the Fortune EV2 match. And we do not have 100% confirmation on the injury of one Tommy Dreamer. Sir Rockin was looking into it today for us to see if some spies in the impact zone were able to find out what happened with him. If you did not see the event, It was interesting just to see a guy basically at one point, and Mace will chime in a minute because he's got a bit of medical knowledge more than us, that it almost looked like if you, for whatever camera angle you're looking at, Dreamer either broke his hand, broke his wrist, broke both bones in his forearm, or just had his entire arm fall off completely Monty Python style. Either way, he lost to RVD. The Abyss, Pope Angelo, De Niro, fans, Lumberjacks, whatever the heck they were called. By the way, peeps up to Corey Chavis of the Dark City Fight Club, who was mixed in with those groups. And as Bug pointed out on Sunday, for a group of all African Americans, there were some really nice Puerto Ricans mixed in too. But hey, we're equal opportunity people. Jeff Jarrett did defeat Samoa Joe thanks to some help from TNA security once again. Just put Gunnar and Murphy on the roster and get it over with already. The secure red shirt security from TNA Nashville revisited. And yes, your friend of mine, Mr. Jeff Hardy, is your world champion still after defeating Matt Morgan in probably one of the weirder Clash of Styles matches you will see. To Mace first, as mentioned, you do have some, you've had wrist injuries, including being referee. Thoughts on Tommy Dreamer? You gave some on Sunday, but after having a couple days, think it over and possibly review the match. Probably the gutsiest performance in recent memory of anyone in wrestling to keep going the way he did.
Oh, yeah. Like, we've always known Tommy Dreamer has been one of the utmost professional guys in wrestling today. And this sort of cements that into stone. It's not a break from what I've sort of heard and what I've had a look at, sort of going through a few of my other wrestling friends who have also had wrist injuries as well. It's going to be probably he's popped something out of joint and slight strain, or for all I know, taking a look at the photos he posted on Twitter afterwards, it could just be a gigantic egg that he's formed in his wrist. So chances are he'll just wrap it up, ice it down some more, and we'll probably see him back on TV as soon as possible. But, you know, this isn't going to be a career-ending injury like a lot of people were saying at the time, you know. It's like, oh, this should be his, you know, get out of the TNA card, you know, retire from wrestling. No. Something like that is probably going to be a minor thing for him, and he will come back and he will keep wrestling.
Just rub some dirt on it.
Pretty much, just get Sabu to get some scotch tape out and wrap it up. It's all good.
Whereas from my big fat Greek wedding, just spray some Windex on it. Overall, your opinion of this pay-per-view, you kind of gave it a mixed grade. Was that your match of the night, RVD, a Dreamer, or was it the Guns and Team 3D?
I went with Guns and Team 3D because as good as the Dreamer RVD match was, the storytelling, the creativity between both teams and the way they just seemed to gel together was just made it so much more an enjoyable match. And I even said in our production chat, I'm surprised that I've actually turned around and gone, Team 3D have the match of the night, because we've all been watching that team decline for years now, and to see them end up being a match of the night candidate was like, wow. It goes to show that when you put two teams together, you never know what's going to happen. But other than that, the show, as usual, we keep saying this on Wrestle Talk Radio, TNA pay-per-views, very solid wrestling. Every time they come out, they do a really good job in the ring. But it's the storylines and some of the backstage segments that seem to drag the show down.
To Spug, you did watch bits and pieces from what you had mentioned. Thoughts? So I also forgot to mention that Tara and Mickey James basically brawled all over the place and then into promos and everything. It almost reminded me of the movie Airplane, where the two girls, or Airplane and Airplane 2, where the two girls are just brawling all over the place and kept going into random scenes. It was just like, okay, are they going to start brawling in the mummy ride next door, or ride one of the roller coasters and start punching each other out? Your overall view of the pay-per-view, favorite match, and match that you could have totally lived without?
Match I could have totally lived without on that pay-per-view was Jeff Hardy versus Matt Morgan.
Wow.
And it was a crap match. It was 100% a crap match. Jeff Hardy has no business with a heavyweight title around his waist. None. He was a horrible champion in WWE, and he's a horrible champion in TNA. And match of the night has to go to the Dudleys and Motor City Machine Guns.
And we'll also mention the next pay-per-view is Final Resolution, which is December 5th. I kind of gave the pay-per-view a mixed grade, as both gentlemen mentioned. Thought Rob Echo, Jay Lethal was a very good opener. Was never a big fan of Tara Lisa Verone, whatever you want to call her, and Mickie James and WWE. So it was the perfect match to tuck my daughter in, and then I came back in and called like, hey, they're still going. And the WrestleTalk Radio chat was talking more about fashion than they were about anything else. I think, you just like, okay, you know, the match is bad when we're talking about chaps and what looked like assless chaps. And let's add credit to Team 3D. Happen to see spoilers from the next couple weeks. And oh, baby, what a great way to screw up a perfect ending. Also, we'll address something that did come out of this TV. This is not a spoiler. This is something that came out of TV, that there was an incident this past Monday night at the Impact tapings in Orlando, and if fans aren't aware, when you go to the tapings, unless you're in one of those VIP packages you buy through TNAWrestling.com or ShopTNA.com, you're not paying to enter the Impact Zone unless you have a park annual park pass or something along those lines, where you can enter the building without paying. And the company plugged during the taping the fans could get their photo taken with current world champion Jeff Hardy after the taping, and were charging $25. Well, apparently when the time came, Hardy came out, insulted Jeremy Borash, the announcer, who also handles a lot of day-to-day operations of TNA, and the fans. Then told the fans to take their money and, quote, go buy groceries before going to the back and not coming back out. After a few minutes,
wait,
TNA and Universal...
Hold on.
Let me finish.
I didn't hear who did this.
Jeff Hardy did.
Oh.
Hardy then goes to the back. TNA and Universal Studio employees actually begin to refund money. TNA and Universal staff, which are theme park employees that get overtime by going to the Impact Zone and working, a lot of them are really nice people to deal with, were said to be completely confused and caught off guard. Several fans and kids were very upset by the situation, and there was no word on what was behind the incident as of now. Little weird for you to live your character, especially when someone's plunking down $25 for you. See either one of you here. I find it weird. Very weird.
I don't find it weird to live your character because, you know, back in the day, that's what you did. You know, in the 70s and into the 80s, that's what you did. You didn't break kayfabe. If you were out in public, if you were a heel, you were a heel. You played the asshole. Unfortunately, however, I think Jeff Hardy is one of those individuals who, I don't want to say can't differentiate reality from fantasy, but this isn't the first time where someone has reported on him having an outburst at fans or in the back. You know what I mean? We've heard stories before about Hardy and his eccentricity. Again,
I'm someone that can testify to it. When he first came into TNA Wrestling, the pit, or whatever they now call those fans that stand on the hard can side, there were a bunch of them that were anti-Hardy folks, and they would actually turn their backs to Hardy when he would come out to do his little intro in the corner. And on a few occasions, he actually flicked them off, and it got caught by the Fox Sports Net cameras. So I'm just sitting there going, okay, you're a professional, and you just let these fans get to you like that. I know there's a certain point where you crack, but come on, dude. As I said, there's kids that are paying you, Jeff Hardy, in excess of $25 that are hoping to meet you. Grant, like I said, he's a heel character. I understand that, Spug, and I understand that, Mace. But if he's a heel character, why even have him do that? Why have people start refunding money and everything? One former TNA coworker wrote into a website. This came from Sorokin, that said, seriously, they didn't learn from Steve Austin switching heel and starting the downfall of his hot period in 2001. There are a few people who just want to boo, but also take their money and have them, look forward to getting something, and then screw them on purpose and give it back. Next time as a fan, I'll spend on groceries, whether or not it's a real autograph session. That actually came from Mike Aldrin, one of our colleagues in the wrestling world with his Wrestling Globe newsletter, and I apologize for cutting you off, sir.
Oh, you're all right.
Yeah, Mace, does this bother you at all? That they at least have them do it before people start chunking down $25? I mean, at least TNA did refund the money.
I like moves like this only because, like Spug said, you know, back in the day, which was a Wednesday for anybody who gets that joke.
Thank you, Dan Cook.
people used to live kayfabe. You know, a lot of people still on the independent circuits will live kayfabe. I've had to do it myself on the odd occasion. But to go as far as to offer the autograph and then start taking the money, that's a bad idea. That's bad business. They should have said, you know, at the end of the show, have your money ready at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, by the sounds of the way this went, they've been taking money since people were walking through the door, which is not the way to do these type of things. So that way, you're going to have a lot more pissed off fans for the wrong reason now. They're going to hate the company, not Jeff Hardy.
I completely agree with that.
Whereas if they took the money at the end of the show, or were going to, and then you announced that Jeff Hardy wasn't going to do it, people would be more pissed off at Jeff Hardy than the company. Sorry.
Right. Hold on. Alan, before you continue, mm-hmm. My little one would like to speak with you.
Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Hello, little bugger.
Say, hey, Alan.
Hey, Alan.
Go Browns.
Go Browns.
Can you bark?
Yeah, and in case fans don't get it, that would be in reference to the old dog pound. There is still some of the dog pound around. Did a lot of the fans from the old pound get their stay with the Browns when they came in?
Oh, big dog's still there. The bone lady's still there. Dog pound Mike is there. I get seats in the dog pound about 3 times a year.
Yeah, it'll be fun Sunday for us to see former coach Man Genius.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, he ain't that Man Genius right now with the way your record is, but hey.
Are you not paying attention? Did you not just see who we just beat?
Okay.
We'll save
this for later, because I know you want to bet me a child or sheepskin or something.
Oh, boy. I'm ready for Sunday. Oh, okay.
Hey, after a comeback against the Lions, I'm sitting there going, "Dear God, it can't get any worse." But it does get worse, because if you're a fan of ours at OWWGenesis.com and other message boards around the way, you have seen the new TNA World Heavyweight Championship belt. And if Sir Rockin can find a link for us to post in our chat room, which is at WildTalkRadio.com, you will all get to take a peek at this little gem of a championship. It will be revealed, I believe, this Thursday night on Impact. As I said, normally we're a spoiler-free zone, but after last night's taping and some fans hitting us up at RadioAndOnlineWorldOfWrestling.com, I couldn't sit there and just be quiet on my hands going, wow, we'll talk about this after it airs. Baloney. As I said, go to... Just find the newsletter, find something. So Sorokin will try to find us a photo in a moment or two here for everybody to enjoy this belt. I know Mace has seen it. I'm not 100% sure if Spug has seen it yet. But during the program this Thursday, Immortal will take the current TNA World Championship belt and dump it into a garbage can. I wonder where they got that from. And present Jeff Hardy with the new championship belt, which I can't believe I'm about to say actually looks worse than the WWE tag team belts, Mace.
Oh, yeah. This one, I'm still trying to place what it is. So far, we've got people comparing it to the WWE Divas title. Personally, being the geek that I am and the fact that I talk with Omega way too often, I figured it was some sort of Kamen Rider prop or the belt from WMAC Masters, both of which you could probably get more information about on tjomega.blogspot.com. But, yeah, this belt, especially with its ugly pinkish-purple strap, somebody tell me why. I want to know why, and who the hell thought that this was going to be a good design choice?
It's no smoking skull, Stone Cold Steve Austin belt, but good God.
You know, if you look at the belt, it's meant to look like Hardy's face paint. And unfortunately, it looks like the Ultimate Warrior and the Divas title had an affair, an illegitimate child, and all of them fell into a vat of molten metal, and that belt popped out.
With a Papa John's pizza.
With a Papa John's pizza. Meat lovers.
Yeah, I'm still trying to get my hands around it. Spug has since posted it. I believe that came from Michael Barton, who is a wrestling journalist as well. So we'll credit him. It may or may not be his twit pick, since I don't do the twit or the tweet or whatever the hell that thing's called. Not allowed, not going near it. Fans that aren't aware of it, the natural Kenny King of the All Night Express said, nope, you can't do it, so I will not do it. OWW Radio does have one at twitter.com/OWWCOM in big bold letters. You can also, through that, I believe, checking out the Tommy Dreamer injuries and a bunch of other stuff. And we'll address some more TNA wrestling on the other side of this break, which, once again, this is a pre-Black Album. And if you're a fan of Metallica's, you'll get the references. And also Spinal Tap, you'll get the Black Album references. This would be Anesthesia taking us out here. On the other side of the break, we will address TNA Goes Family Feud and other recent events. We'll be back after this on the World of Wrestling Radio.
The $1 million man.
Paul Pogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow,
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart,
Harry Smith, Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site for pros you. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today. It's
quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show. So tune in. Listen. I demand it.
This is the Ultimate Warrior! I am taking time from my job delivery pizza for Papa John's to tell all the little model warriors out there to tune into this radio program from the 7th moon of Raxor in the Gaxan Galaxy! Congress on Top Radio! This show is on during the apex of the sun and the dark side of Saturn, otherwise known to the masses as Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time Zone. Or when the WWE or TNA pay-per-viewership finish and the Warrior stands supreme over the fallen victims of X-Lax. So go, puny masses, and listen to the show, because the power of the Warrior commands you to do it. Now the Warrior needs to go and deliver this meat lover's pizza to the mortals that ordered it.
Welcome back to All My World of Wrestling Radio here on the Wild Talk Radio Network on a pre-Black Album Metallica. As you know, they have a really cool game thanks to Guitar Hero Metallica. And you can rock out to all these songs. There's a couple that are available. There's one on Guitar Hero World Tour that I just sat there playing at going like, okay, if this is the way this is, I can't imagine that Guitar Hero game at all. Since you are a Metallica person, Spug, do you happen to own the Guitar Hero Metallica?
I don't own a console.
Wait a minute. You work for Otaku Talk Live and don't own a game console.
I do not. The wife and I are buying one, though.
Ah, excellent.
The Christmas present to the family this year is we are going to be buying a console.
And so, children, if you're listening to Daddy, you never heard what he said, none of that ever happened.
I only have one, and she's in bed.
Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully.
But my buddy owns Guitar Hero Metallica, and Fight Fire with Fire is on there.
Right.
And I tell you what, that, even on Guitar Hero, when it's dumbed down to the most basic of power chords, on the controller, that thing is insane. Like, it is the most insane song I've ever played.
Well, it's definitely something for fans to check out. Something else we want to check out before we get to Family Feud, report that came out today that I like to debunk because I actually investigated into it. F4WOnline.com was reporting that Showtime Eric Young turned down a contract to return to TNA Wrestling and has apparently departed from the company. Young, who has been with TNA since January of 2004, going back to when he was a member of Team Canada, reportedly was offered a deal substantially worse than his current contract and refused to sign. They claim that Young is expected to explore other options outside of TNA for the foreseeable future. Due to sources that I spoke with today, this is not 100% true. Eric Young is still in negotiations with TNA, and in fact, as of today's TV taping, there were meetings going on to keep him in the fold, be it either with the tag team with Orlando Jordan or sending him into another direction. Obviously, his concussion storyline got put on the shelf. If you don't know what we're talking about, hey, a lot of people don't either, because in the United States, we don't get explosion where the storyline took place or fell off the ring apron and hit his head. To either one of you, he's got to be, he is a great talent when he gets in the ring, but since the Team Canada situation was dissolved and Petey Williams exited, Johnny Devine exited, A1 exited, Scott D'Amore exited, Bobby Roode became a millionaire, and Robert Roode, he's got to be one of the most mishandled characters in the last few years in TNA wrestling.
I'd like to see him go to WWE, and they could tag him up with Santino Marella. That's comedy gold waiting right there.
That would be an interesting pairing. I kind of like that one there. Fan or not fan of Eric Young, Mace?
I am a fan of Eric Young. I am a big fan of Eric Young. Very underrated talent. Has yet to show his true potential, both in the ring and as a character. But the thing is, they keep flopping him around. They want him to be, you know, a goofy face, or they want him to be a serious heel. They bounce him around so much, it's hard for him to just go out and do what is best for him. And like you said, very mishandled talent. He needs to find something and stick with it and be given a proper run with it. Like, he could be a very good X Division champion. Well, better than Robbie E, anyway.
But and as you mentioned, he has bounced around since that. He did the whole I'm scared of my pyro thing, and the next thing you know, he was inserted in with the band, I believe they were called, the former Wolfpack, whoever, and now he's that. Now he's doing this.
Don't forget Super Eric.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. I want to forget Super Eric, because the first time I ever saw it, I'm just sitting there going, what is this, the Midnight Rider or something? Or Yellow Dog or whatever they put on Brian Pillman back in the day? I'm like,
come on. Come on, Alan. You know, Curry Man and Super Eric, tag team of the future, man. Come on.
I'm still amazed to this day that Curry Man was even used in this country. I did an interview with Christopher Daniels a couple times in 03 and 04, and that was always the question that all my fans internationally would ask me, is you gotta ask him about Curry Man, and Chris always said, nope, never gonna do Curry Man in the US, the fans won't get the gimmick, and next thing I know, tune into TNA, and sure enough, it's like, hey, Curry Man's here, whoop!
I popped hardcore for Curry Man, that was awesome!
He's spicy.
Then again, I'm a big fan of Japanese wrestling and all their very weird gimmicks.
Oh, I'm sure. Wasn't it Hustle was the promotion that had like a lot of gimmick related stuff?
Yeah, Hustle. I think New Japan, Old Japan had their fair share of weird gimmicks as well. So it's just about everywhere. Like, there was one place that I can't remember exactly which Fed had it, but they had a 24/7 hardcore title at one point. A ladder held it until it was pinned by a chihuahua. And another one, they had a six-year-old girl who'd wrestled like the Big Show. You know, some of the weirdest stuff I've ever seen comes from Japanese wrestling, but it is always awesome.
And as Bug said, the Curry Man was very spicy and a lot of fun to watch, and kind of wish Christopher Daniels was back in the programming, but he's doing really well in Ring of Honor. I wish him nothing but the best. If you missed it, and you probably did, because I vaguely remember TNA Wrestling doing a segment on it, the syndicated version of Family Feud, now hosted by Steve Harvey, had the TNA Knockouts taking on TNA Stars. The Knockout group was the Beautiful People, Tara and Christy Hemme, taking on the interesting group of Mick Foley, Jay Lethal, RVD, Matt Morgan, and Mr. Anderson. I can testify to the fact that this was obviously taped many weeks ago. Also to the point it was taped the same weekend, funny enough, that RVD came back looking all bandaged up like he escaped from one of the mummy factories. I did witness bits and pieces of this event. Mace, thanks to downloading abilities in Australia and on-demand services, was able to partake in it as well. good move, bad move by TNA overall. It can't be a bad move to get your talent out there on daytime TV.
No, it's not. You know, any promotion is good promotion, to be honest. And well, I don't know how popular Family Feud is in the United States these days, but you know, those type of game shows tend to generate a lot of viewers, and hopefully it helped, you know, Impact get some more people watching. The only problem I had with it was that there was no mention of, you know, them being on TV to begin with, which we've always said is TNA's biggest problem. They don't promote when their show is on. But personally, I just love the answers because I, being an independent wrestler myself, and Spug as well, is in the same boat, it seems that any time they're given an answer that could be, well, they get a question that can have some sort of sexual answer, they will go straight to that, as rude and as vulgar as they can. And the host, I reckon the guy who's hosting it, he had to be fearing for his job by the end of it, because I believe Velvet Sky said something that got the ire of the censors. She said something that was completely beeped out, and I'm like, oh, I want to know what she said now.
Jay Lethal had a couple, too, that was just kind of looking at Jay going, where the heck is your mind, dude?
Basically, top three people to watch in that show, if you can still get it, Lacey, because her answers are said so well, but they are absolutely horrible. Jay Lethal has some real classic what the hell lines, and you actually get to see how smart guys like Matt Morgan and Mick Foley really are. You know, a lot of the answers coming from Mick Foley, I'm like, wow, who would have thought that, you know, he had such a good mind on it. Matt Morgan, I expected it.
Graduate.
Yeah, Matt Morgan, I expected it from, because, you know, college grad, and any time I've tried to ask him about questions pertaining to wrestling, he seems to come back with, go and get an education. I'm like, well, dude, I'm 27.
Yeah.
It's definitely a very good show to watch if you just want to sit back and have a good laugh, because these guys just go overboard every single time.
I know Spug does have a daytime gig, but overall thoughts on TNA Wrestling getting out there in this format? I mean, if Hollywood Squares were still around, TNA Wrestling being on board might have been a pretty cool idea as well.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with any promotion getting out there like that. WWE's done it, so, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I would like to see, however, them build on this. If they get some sort of increased viewership, you know what I mean? Take it to the next level, see what you can do.
Yeah, and hopefully they will. Like I said, I don't want them to follow what WWE does, which seems to be the vibe that we're getting everywhere around. It's like, oh, WWE did something. We must copy. Seems to be the thing back in the day with WCW, but positive move by them. Not positive move is recently some of their house shows that were to be in the next couple weeks were actually canceled due to poor attendance. I believe one of the events was Evansville, Indiana, and we'll address a couple events that are going to go on in Evansville tomorrow night and Thursday night through some friends of mine that promote in that area. We're going to help them out, get the word out about one of their events. But that's kind of scary to hear that your live events are being canceled due to poor ticket sales. I know somewhere, I think it was Port Huron, it was somewhere in Michigan on a recent swing that they went through Minnesota and Michigan, that some fans on OWW Genesis and other boards posted that they had a crowd of 150, and sitting there going to myself, QM, you have one of the best rosters on the planet, that, and Kevin Nash outlined it when he was on his wine-induced twit, that you have on your roster Jeff Hardy and RVD and Anderson, even though he's injured right now, and Fortune, Samoa Joe, Jeff Jarrett, you can name them on and on and on. But to either gentleman, should this be scaring any executives in TNA's offices, especially the guys that are booking the live events, to go, maybe we should research a little more where we're doing our live events, do some TV demographic work to see who's watching our program in this particular town? I mean, wouldn't this be something that a WWE exec would have done a long time ago?
Probably. I can't properly answer the question because TNA has done so much stuff that's bass-ackwards. I don't know what their thought process is, you know what I mean? Like, why... I don't know what kind of venues they're booking for these shows.
I think they're doing ECW, old-school ECW-sized venues. I don't think they're doing anything more than 5,000-6,000 seats.
Well, then they shouldn't... You know, the problem with TNA is their product isn't that big to fill 5,000-6,000-seat arenas. They're not. Start small. Go to like, not Rupp Arena, but like the Rhodes Arena in Akron at the U of A campus. You might be able to squeeze 1,000 or 2,000 in there. You know, you got to start small, and because they're on the backside of trying to you know, to do this, they've not done this properly from the start. You know, they're kind of at a disadvantage.
And they will be running in Nashville this weekend. I believe it's this Friday. They return to the Asylum for a one-night event, which, yeah, that's really cool. But as we addressed on here with Mike Posey and other folks, and folks listening in from the Mid-South message board that's run by Trent Van Dries can testify to having attended that town event, the TNA being there and giving away tons and tons of paper tickets to the weekly pay-per-views. They burn that place to the ground. To Mace, does that situation bother you not as much as Spug, or does that... Should that be sending off alarms in Nashville's offices? I mean, Dixie's not doing anything on TV. Maybe Dixie should be out there pounding. She claims that she talks to every single person at events, and I can testify, having met her a few dozen times, she does go up to people, she does interact with folks, but if I was in Nashville, my furniture wouldn't be in my office right now because I would have thrown it out the window onto Broadway.
Personally, this doesn't mean jack to me. Are TNA putting on the tour in Australia? No? Well, then to hell with them.
Have they even... They've never been south to you guys yet, have they?
No, some TNA stars have been down here through, I believe it was Andrew McManus's promotion at one point, an event I did attend, which I found quite amusing, especially seeing an AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, Iron Man match go for a 60-minute draw, which was repeated the next Sunday night on pay-per-view. But they did have one planned for February this year, but they canceled that when Hogan and Bischoff came in. And since then, there has been no word as to if they are even going to bother with trying to make it up to us here in Australia. And if their house show business is doing poorly in the US, I doubt they're going to want to do an international tour.
I know they're doing one in England in early January. I think it's called a Maximum Overdrive or Override or something along those lines. But it's just very weird it's weird for someone Kevin Nash to say it in Twit that, though, I believe it was RVD and Jeff that had actually said it at some point on the show, Maze, that, you know, we're the rock stars of TNA, and as Kevin said in his tweet, whatever the hell it's called, that you're such rock stars, you can't fill a 1,000-seat arena, it harkens back to WWF of the mid-90s and even WCW back in the early 90s, where they were running arenas that you'd walk in and go, whoa, okay. I can testify to going to a Monday Night Raw in December of 96 after I moved here at the St. Pete Times Forum, which is the home of the Tampa Bay Lightning, which seats for hockey 18 and change, and they had from the center line of the building to your left was where the Monday Night Raw set was back in 96. Now look at WWE, and we'll address them in the second and third hour, but I mean, it's not a on Jeff Jarrett's head to a little bit, because I can testify to seeing him on numerous websites, and including ours, of Jeff getting out there at weekends of house show events, that he's doing the morning TV shows. Him and Jeremy Borash do the radio shows. So I'm not sure if it's a street team issue, or if it's an economic issue, or as I mentioned to both of you earlier in the chat room as well, that it's just lack of knowledge of booking the proper cities. You got all this money, man. Get out there and invest it. Instead of investing it in DVD projects that people may or may not want to watch. I mean, we'll book it. We'll tell you, here, this is where you should. This is where you should not go. So, I don't understand it.
I think that it's more along the lines of sort of perceptions, if you will, about not only TNA, but being a TNA fan. You got to remember that a lot of the TNA fans, or the hardcore fans, usually cop a lot of crap from every other wrestling fan out there, because supposedly the attitude is you're not allowed to like TNA because they are not WWE. They are putting on a crap product. They are putting on the WWE rejects and all that type of stuff. It's like going back to pre-97 wrestling, where if you went out there and you said, I'm a wrestling fan, you got ridiculed for it. Now it's become more specific, whereas if you walk out there and go, I'm a TNA fan, you're going to cop it. And people don't want to show up to something that they're going to get ridiculed for going to. It's human mentality that is probably holding them back more than anything else.
Yeah, and that goes back, harkens back to a time during the 90s before the Monday Night Wars where it was not common for people to go like, yeah, I'm a wrestling fan, sort of. And then you had the boom and everybody was like, I'm a wrestling fan, and the NWO exploded, and I know we're doing revisionist history here. And hey, maybe we should teach a wrestling history of wrestling course so we can get Sheldon Goldberg involved in that one. Like, welcome to university. We're here to teach you about wrestling.
Oh, Alan, here's the thing with TNA and doing house shows or road shows, whatever you want to call them. They've essentially, for the entire length of their existence, have mainly broadcast out of two buildings. The Asylum in Nashville and a sound studio in Universal Studios in Orlando, Florida. They've never really built a fan base to begin with by doing the road shows like WWE has done and WCW did and ECW did. And perhaps they don't know their fan base as well as they like to think they do. You can't sit there and go, all right, well, we're going to play in Evansville tonight, and then we're going to go to Chickamauga, Georgia tomorrow night, and then we're going to go across the country to San Francisco, California the next night. Pick an area and start there. You have a pretty good wrestling following in the Southeast, Georgia, Bama, Mississippi, South Carolina, Florida. Why not start there? There's thousands of smaller colleges and even bigger universities like Auburn and Bama and whatnot that have decent-sized arenas. College kids will go to anything.
Oh, sure.
For the most part. So if you start there and you build your fan base there. You start playing, you know, 2,000 and 3,000 seat arenas, and then you start selling those out on a consistent basis. Then maybe you move up to the 6,000 to 10,000 seat arenas and whatnot, and you build. Do your pay-per-views on the road. You have the money. You know, start in a geographic location and go from there. Don't throw darts at a map of the United States and say, we're going to do shows here. Doing a house show in Evansville, Indiana, yeah, it's a college town. Northwestern's there, but you're not really near any major city. You know, you're not really near anything.
Here is, thanks to TNAWrestling.com, this is the weekend that they do have planned. As mentioned, Friday night, Nashville, the return to the TNA Asylum, the Nashville Fairgrounds Arena, which is an interesting venue for wrestling. Saturday, they are in Dalton, Georgia at the Dalton Trade Center. And Sunday the 14th, they are, funny enough, the home of AJ Styles, Gainesville, Georgia at the Georgia Mountain Center. And as mentioned, they do a TV tape on the 15th and 16th. There are events in Evansville on the 19th and Indianapolis on the 20th have been canceled. Past that, they have listed Impact tapings the 6th, the 7th, the 8th, the 9th. Yes, they're taping a bunch after Final Resolution, and that's a common thing for TNA to do. They try to keep their stars home during the holidays. At one point, they actually did the New Year's show, which is kind of fun. The next events that they have listed aren't until January, and that may change. They have an event in Wallingford, Connecticut on the 6th, Westbury, New York, which they have played before, on the 7th. Then they have events in Reading, Pennsylvania, Upper Marlboro, Maryland, Hagerstown, Maryland. And then the end of January, it's called Maximum Impact, the European tour. I was wrong on the name. And they're going to Lyon and Paris, France, Dublin, Ireland, Berlin, Germany. And load page, please. They will also be hitting on that European tour, Glasgow, Scotland, Manchester, England. Hey, isn't another wrestling group just run there last night? And London, England to round out January. So definitely interesting stuff from TNA Wrestling coming up in the near future. We're going to be taking our next break because coming up after it, wrestling historian and former owner of NECW, Sheldon Goldberg, will join us here. Spoilers are out from tonight's TNA Impact taping. Find them and revel in the joy that is very weirdness of TNA Wrestling. All I Will of Wrestling Radio will be back after this.
This is The Rocket, the host of CB Radio, which you can catch every Saturday night.
Whoa, wait. Rock?
Yes, Cindy?
Did you just call yourself the host of CB Radio?
I kind of did just call me the host of CB Radio.
Honey, everyone knows that you are just the producer.
Hey, I'm not just the producer. I am the host of this.
Oh, my God. Shut up. Everyone knows that I am the host of CB Radio, which you can check out Saturday night, midnight-ish, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Now, Rock,
yes, darling.
This is where you tell everyone, I'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
Good boy.
for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans, then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forum. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown. It's the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forum, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, with the advent of geek culture becoming mainstream, we here at the Wild Talk Radio Network are doing our best to capitalize on this phenomenon. In that vein, I, Mace, a co-host of Otaku Talk Live, have decided to move a small section of what we would talk about on OTL to its very own podcast. That podcast being Fashion the Book. Now, what you will hear on there is myself going through select readings of this week's comic book, and I just let you know what's going on. So, every Thursday, maybe Friday, maybe Saturday, you'll be able to hear me talk about comic books. Okay, maybe boring, maybe not, who knows? The only way you're going to find out is to go over to the archives section of WildTalkRadio.com and download the show and have a listen for yourself. That's Bashing the Books, somewhere near the end of the week, right here on WildTalkRadio.com.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indies, all this and more can be found on one site. The Heroes Den, whenever they wrestle. Head on over to www.onlineworldwrestling.com. News, news, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a month's worth away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Vince Vincent,
Mick Foley.
Plus, the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best known internet wrestling stars today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christine Cage.
Jerry.
Candice LeSalle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Vance, the Boogie Woogie.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wilson, Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith.
Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the site that throws you. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
And welcome back to the second era of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the folks at Wild Talk Radio Network. Our toll-free line is 877-588-9877. It is brought to you by undergroundradio.com. Bug and Mace from Otaku Talk Live and Wrestle Talk Radio are staying with us as long as they are allowed to by either their wives or just the space-time continuum. We are joined by a distinguished member of the wrestling journalist community. He is a member of the Cauliflower Alley Club, which has been addressed on this show, which is a nonprofit organization consisting of active and retired boxers, wrestlers, Hollywood stuntmen. He is also part of the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame Induction Committee, On and Off, which is based out of Schenectady, New York. He has written for tons of newsletters. If you are a fan of A&E's biography, he was interviewed by the folks for an Andre the Giant event. He was on the Unreal Story of Professional Wrestling, which was narrated by Hollywood legend Steve Allen. He has also appeared on ESPN Outside the Lines, MSNBC. He's everywhere in the world. And up until this past weekend was the co-owner, producer, director, demigod of New England Championship Wrestling. He is also a member of the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. He is sitting there going, shut up and stop talking about my accolades. We welcome also, he is also the host of a radio show based out of his home area in New England, which is called Mouthpiece Wrestling. He is Sheldon Goldberg. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. I know you've been bombarded with requests, and we're very honored that you were able to join us tonight.
Well, it's much appreciated. You know, if I knew I had to go out of business to get on the show, I would have gone out of business a lot sooner.
I don't want it. It's one of those, like we said, I had talked to you earlier in the day, and I was just like, okay, he's such a revered person. I'm going to email this guy, and he's going to go, ah, you're nobody, go away. And all of a sudden, it was like, he's like, I know who you are. You're very good. I would totally like to be on your program. So
yeah.
It's a great thing to have you here with us. For fans that aren't aware of it, take us back in time a bit. Instead of starting at the end of this unfortunate series of events, take us back to 2000. What led you to decide that you wanted to even have a promotion, and take us through the steps that led to the founding of New England Championship Wrestling?
Well, for 5.5 years prior to starting New England Championship Wrestling, I worked with a guy, the late Boston Bad Boy Tony Rumble. And he had a promotion up here called Century Wrestling Alliance that later became NWA New England. Tony and I became very close. I was essentially a partner in that company. And he passed away suddenly in November of 1999, and at that point, it kind of left a void in the area. And I made the decision after his widow had decided to try to take the company in a different direction with different people. I made the decision to start up on my own with the help of former WCW referee Scott Dickinson, and that led to the start of New England Championship Wrestling. And the idea behind the company was actually a little bit different than what people were doing up here at the time. In New England, at least in this area, what independent wrestling consisted of was basically shows where you'd get a few promoters in the area that would book a couple of big names who are off contract or were, you know, available through the WWF then, as what they used to call third-party bookings, where you could book some of their undercard talent, you know, for a fee and so forth. And so most of the shows were fundraisers, and you'd have, you know, the two big names or four big names on top, and then, you know, the local guys were just a mishmash underneath. I wanted to do something that was a true local wrestling promotion where the local guys were the stars, and it was local heroes, local villains, storylines that would hopefully bring you back month after month. And it was something that that hadn't really been done in this area. So that was really the start of New England Championship Wrestling. It was I saw kind of a void in the area as far as pro wrestling went, especially after the passing of Tony Rumble. And I've been doing it ever since, up until this past weekend.
Now, at a certain point during all of this, you merged in with another group. Go into, please, what led to you merging with the PWF Mayhem group, and looking back now, mistake by the company to do that, or do you not regret it?
No regrets whatsoever. No regrets whatsoever. What led up to it is I had a falling out with the guy who was the booker of the company at the time, Bob Evans. We didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, and he went his way and I went mine, and the PWF guys, Matt and Kyle Storm, came to me and said, hey, you know, we'd like to be in business with you. You know, we see what you've done, we see what's going on with you and what you're trying to accomplish, and we think that working together with you that we can do a lot of things. And they weren't the only people that had come to me, but they were guys who were invested in the area. There were aspects of what they were doing that were really good, and it seemed that our strengths and weaknesses complemented each other at the time. So I decided to get involved with them, and there were no regrets at all. I think some of the best things that NECW ever did were done with them. And what happens sometimes in businesses is things don't work out for a variety of reasons, many of which were not the fault of anyone. I can't say that I have any regrets whatsoever. And if I had to do it all over again, I would have done it. And like I say, no regrets whatsoever.
Sheldon Goldberg joining us here on Online World of Wrestling Radio. Thanks to a mutual friend, namely Howard Brody, I found out that at some point or another you were involved with the World Superstars of Wrestling group that him and Hiromatsuda had been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
Did you take anything away from working with other companies along the way and working for websites and writing and having your ear to certain walls? Did you pick up anything along the way that helped you keeping this promotion going as long as it did?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I'll tell you, I consider myself to be a very, very lucky person. I got a chance to meet and be friends with many people that I consider heroes, many people that I consider to be individuals that I really, really admired. And I got a chance to learn from those people. I had a chance to sit down and break bread and chat with them and learn a variety of things. And you talked about Howard and World Superstars of Wrestling and the late Hiro Matsuda. I used to talk to Hiro quite a bit, and he was very, very generous with me in terms of his knowledge and his experience. He's somebody who was a very treasured friend to me. A lot of the things that he expressed to me, and ideas and thoughts that he had, and concepts about pro wrestling, were things that I carried with me, and I tried to live up to the example that some of those people had set in the way I conducted myself, and the things that I tried to do. So I learned so much from so many people. As I said, I was very, very fortunate. And people in wrestling will tell you that the way you learn about this business is you hang around with the people who have been there and done that. You ride with them, you eat with them, you talk to them, you ask them questions, you listen to their stories, and you can't help but walk away with knowledge, and if you're paying attention, with a lot of experience. And those things have served me in good stead over the years.
Go to your website for a moment, which is, or was, NEECW Wrestling. I'm sorry for butchering the name on that one here. You do have a great roster of talent here, including a lot of women stars, such as Ariel and Mistress Belmont and Latasha. Talk about the current roster that you had set up now, and it evolving, if you can compare it to who was on your roster in 2000, feel that it was a growth and a great way for upcoming talent to come in, or for fans that haven't attended your events, how much was the former WWE guy or the TNA guy used in your monthly or weekly programming?
Very, very, very rare times when we have names involved in our cards. There were a lot of people who became names and worked for us before they became famous. John Cena worked for us once. Beth Phoenix worked for us a number of times. If you remember Trinity from ECW and TNA, she had her first singles match with our company. Chris Nowinski worked for us a couple of times. Fergal Devitt, who's the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, he spent 3 months working for us, came to the area to live and with his uncle and aunt, and asked me to help him out and take him under my wing, which I was happy to do. There's just a lot of folks over the years. Antonio Thomas, who became one half of the Heartthrobs, spent a lot of his early career working for New England Championship Wrestling. And there are just a lot of folks. You know, rosters evolve. And people come and go for any number of reasons. So I can't say that one era of the company was better than another era of the company because, you know, they were different. And, everybody who ever worked for New England Championship Wrestling brought their best to the table. And if you want to talk specifically about the roster that we have now, there's some real, real bright spots and guys that I feel are going to be big stars down the road. Certainly Brandon Locke, from Real Deal Brandon Locke, he's had tryouts recently with WWE and Ring of Honor. That's a kid who could be on Raw tomorrow and make some noise. Hanson Johnny Hayes, I think, is one of the great workers, the great unheralded workers in pro wrestling right now. He won our Toxic Waltz this past Saturday night. It's a kid that came back from after being out for a year with a broken back in three places.
Ooh.
Came back and won our Iron 8 Championship back in May, wrestled for an hour, and this past Saturday night closed out the New England Championship Wrestling year, at least this era of New England Championship Wrestling, by winning the Toxic Waltz and wrestling for 72 minutes. So, you know, he's one of the elite guys, I think, in all of pro wrestling. Another guy that... two other guys that are great standouts for us. One is a kid by the name of Kingpin Brian Malonis, who's a big kid and one of the best working big men you'll ever see. He was in ECW Super 8 this year. Brian Malonis is no pun intended, a gigantic talent. And I think in another era, he'd already be a main event all across the country. Another bright spot for our company is a young man by the name of Ryan Bisbal, who worked at Supermark in Puerto Rico for IWA, a very seasoned young man who came to live up here and came to work for us. And he's just a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. That's another kid who could be on WWE or TNA tomorrow and make an impact. Just a great, great young man and a great worker. So, you know, in this incarnation of New England Championship Wrestling, some tremendous, tremendous talent. And, you know, you mentioned the women. Alexis Nevaeh, who's the World Women's Wrestling Champion for our company, is someone who has grown into one of the elite women wrestlers, I think, in this country. Mr. Spelmont, absolutely one of the elite women wrestlers in this country, also underappreciated and unheralded. But I think those two, amongst others, are going to make a lot of noise in the future. So, I mean, very, very one of the greatest things about promoting wrestling. It's not that you know you're going to make $1 million at it on the independent level. It's watching people get the chance to do what they've always wanted to do and blossom at it. That's the real reward, to see people, you know, and the people respond to them. That's the true reward in all this.
Thanks to your co-host on your radio program, Mike Johnson, and his site, Pro Wrestling Insider, was where the information broke about, unfortunately, everything that took place with this Toxic Wall show being your last event.
Right.
Let's backtrack a little bit to, we spoke about this off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the economy is not the greatest in any situation, but it seems to be, according to Mike's interview, article and everything, the decision to go with Comcast Sports New England, if you could address how it happened and what led to a situation that you quite honestly probably were not prepared for, and now would be not being on the main cable network, being set into an on-demand situation.
Right, right. Very simply, we were supposed to debut on Comcast SportsNet on January 8th. We had a one-year contract to be on Comcast SportsNet Friday afternoons at 4 p.m. Comcast SportsNet New England is a network that reaches 100% of New England, 4.8 million homes throughout New England, I want to say 38 million homes across the country. If I'm not mistaken, I'm just pulling that off the top of my head. I could be wrong about that. If you have a dish and you have the sports package, you'd be able to see it anywhere in the country. So it was a gigantic opportunity for us to elevate ourselves and get a level of exposure on conventional television that certainly rivaled Ring of Honor and any other, non-WWE or TNA entity. And essentially what happened was, to kind of give you a thumbnail sketch, I can't really go into all the details, but the network decided they weren't going to air our show. The compromise was that the show's aired on Comcast On Demand throughout New England, which is a drop to 2.2 million homes. Not unsubstantial, but nonetheless, it was a drop. And, we had spent months preparing and trying to sell this to sponsors, 4.8 million homes throughout New England, 38 million homes across the country. And when we ended up with 2.2 million homes, all the work that we had done to sell it was out the window. And essentially, it was a setback that I think we didn't recover from. So, the hard as we tried and, as hard as we worked, and I think, I don't believe that it was the fault of the product. I don't believe it was the fault of necessarily the economy, although that does play a factor into it. I don't think it was the leading factor, though. Unfortunately, circumstances that were outside of our control tainted us into a financial corner that we couldn't get out of. So there you go.
Who was it? A group decision to do Comcast? Or so it was a group situation.
Right. We had had discussions with them and had met with them extensively, and there were a lot of plans for, co-promotions and some extensive marketing and a lot of things that we had put into play or began to put into play. And, once we got to that moment of the week that we were supposed to air, they said, oh, we got a problem with this. We can't do it. And, we're not going to air it, and that's it. So, it was a real blow to us. And like I said, I think that, we've never really recovered from it.
To this weekend's final show, how soon before this actual event did you know what was going on with your former partners?
Well, we had, as a group, we knew that, we were running out of time. We knew that, the debts were piling up, and we knew that, unless some radical things happened, we wouldn't be able to turn things around. And that's what ended up taking place. So, the decision to close the doors was kind of an inevitable one. I don't think there was any illusion on any of our parts that, that the things were going to change significantly in the near term.
Is there going to be any legal action against your former partners, or is it just the last?
I don't want to go there. We all made the decision. I think the decision to go away was made by all of us. We knew that was that wasn't something that, that was a surprise to any one of us. I don't think any one of us said, geez, we gotta, you know, this has gotta keep going, and we're gonna just, you know, you come to a point where, like I said, circumstances outside of us had painted us into a corner that we couldn't get out of. And that was really the end of it. In wrestling, in order for a wrestling company to be successful, and I remember a few years ago I heard an interview with Jim Cornette regarding the old World Class Championship Wrestling promotion out of Dallas. And he said something that always stuck with me from that moment on when I first heard it, and that is, for a wrestling company to be successful, you have to create the perfect storm. You've got to have the right talent, you've got to have the right booking, you've got to have the right marketing, you've got to have the right media exposure, the right advertising, and so forth. And all of those things aren't in a line exactly the way they're supposed to go, it's not going to work. And trying to create that perfect storm, it's like the riddle of the Sphinx. And that's what I've tried to do as a promoter all these years, and, you know, we came pretty darn close to doing it. But, you know, it's a very difficult thing, and like I say, we gave it a great effort, and I think we leave behind a tremendous legacy with New England Championship Wrestling. And I'm not ashamed of anything, and, you know, I have no excuses, and I have no apologies to make. You know, we did the best that we could with the resources that we had, and, you know, it's not like we had Vince McMahon's checkbook. It's not like, we had tons of resources to do this with. I mean, this was done largely on talent and ability, and not necessarily on having the biggest checkbook. It's not like we just bought our way into things. You know, we worked our way into things. And, like I say, you know, sometimes things happen in a business where you get painted into a corner that you really can't get out of, and, you know, it's for no fault of your own. So,
as mentioned, you do host a popular show, which is heard Saturday nights on AM 1510 in Boston on WWZN. It is Mouthpiece Wrestling. Wanted to pick your brain on some current topics, one being this past Sunday night, TNA Wrestling pay-per-view, pretty much accoladed Team 3D as the most renowned, recognized tag team, most honored tag team in the world. Yeah, 23 championships, but as we all know, yeah, it's a work, kid. So, cool, you got really neat belts. This isn't your first campfire in professional wrestling, and it certainly isn't mine. When you hear someone like Mike Tenay and Taz reference them as the greatest or best tag team, agree, disagree, and if you disagree, who in your mind? Give me maybe 3, 4, possibly 5 teams that would equal Team 3D. Because as I said, belts are great, but ring work and who paid to come see you kind of also weigh a little bit in there.
You know, that's a generational thing, too. I mean, the greatest in this era wouldn't be the same as the greatest in another era. Like, you can't say... You can't really properly compare, say, Bruno Sammartino and Hulk Hogan, because they're two different eras, and their accomplishments are two different types of things. So, yeah, I think Team 3D is one of the greatest tag teams of all time, if for no other reason than longevity and their ability to have remained at the top. I mean, let's face it, those guys didn't have the kind of bodies that were, quote, WWE bodies or WWF bodies at the time. These were guys who were, like, a lot of the original ECW roster, those guys were basically, and you've heard this term before, I know some of you guys, Mace and Spug, you guys are ECW fans from way back. You know, I remember Shane Douglas in interviews referring to the stars of ECW as, like, the land of misfit toys, guys that nobody else wanted and rose to the occasion in their own environment. And that's the real legacy of ECW, is that those guys went on to become big stars, even if they didn't fit the mold of what, quote, a big star was supposed to be in their particular era. The fact that Team 3D has lasted as long as they have as a top team and a top attraction, you got to take your hat off to them, because how many people have really had a run like that in pro wrestling in this era? I mean, it's not a long list.
And as we'll find out in the next week or two through spoilers, as Don Meredith used to say, turn on the lights, the party's over for Team 3D. We're not going to spoil it all, but go to WWE Genesis and you'll see all the fun of that.
Right.
It seems to be the commonplace thing for promotions, TNA, WWE, tag team divisions, to talk about Team 3D. At one point, 04 to 07, you look at the TNA roster. At one point, you had the Naturals, America's Most Wanted, Triple X, in one form or fashion, Diamonds in the Rough, which were Eric Young and David Young and Elix Skipper. You had 3 Live Crew, 4 Live Crew, 27 Live Crew, depending on the method. You had Team Canada. You look at things now, it almost seems that these creative folks, be it Brian Giewitz, Stephanie McMahon, Levesque, Russo, whoever, we'll throw two guys together, take the former champs, Cody Rhodes and Drew McIntyre. The philosophy of tag team wrestling from the 80s where you had, and you've outlined it in numerous interviews and stuff, you probably don't know your career, and you just mentioned, it is a different era, but at one point, wasn't it in the 70s that the WWF pretty much had just written off the tag team situation? And then then brought them back at one point with like Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas and all those folks? Like, is it a cyclical thing, the tag team situation in these promotions, or are we reading into the tea leaves too much?
Well, you know, in the territory days, there were certain territories that were tag team territories and certain territories that weren't. The Worldwide Wrestling Federation was always based around big guys. It was always based around, you know, Bruno, or whether it was Pedro Morales later, or Superstar Billy Graham. It was basically a singles territory, and the tag team division was kind of, kind of a secondary thing. You know, I remember a lot of great tag teams in the old Worldwide Wrestling Federation. One of my favorite tag teams of all time was Rene Goulet and Carl Gotch. That was back in the 70s during the Morales era. I mean, Morales won his champion. It was somewhere between 71 and 73. Crazy Luke Graham and Tarzan Tyler. There were a lot of great tag teams in the Worldwide Wrestling Federation in the 70s. But that wasn't the focus of the promotion. The focus of the promotion was always on the top single star. Whether it was Morales or whether it was San Martino or whether it was Billy Graham or whatever. But, there are other places, like you went to the Carolinas, and the Carolinas was a great tag team territory with the Andersons and so forth. There were different places where the tag team wrestling was a far bigger part of the equation. So it really varied depending on the territory and depending on what that promotion, the roster of that promotion at any given time. You know, the AWA had some great tag teams, at one point in time. You know, the Texas Outlaws, Dick Murdoch and Dusty Rhodes, Harley Race and Larry Henning. It depended on the territory, and it depended on what their concept of pro wrestling was. I mean, all of them, to a large extent, were developed around the top single stars in the area. But, there were some territories that put more of an emphasis on tag teams and some territories that put less of an emphasis. It was very much a territory-to-territory situation.
Mm-hmm. For fans that weren't able to listen to our show, Wrestle Talk Radio, on Sunday night, the topic came up with Bug, Mace, Tim Thein, and Omega of WWE's recent pay-per-view problems with rating. The buys not exactly where they should be, and in quarterly meetings, Vince has come out and said, well, Shawn Michaels retired, and Batista's not here, and Triple H isn't here. And the argument was brought up in a roundtable situation of, instead of doing the 12 or 14 pay-per-views, scale it back to 8 and do, I believe at one point we came up with Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, a King of the Ring type thing again, or a Great American Bash, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and possibly a Starcade. Do you think this current market is it Vince just not getting that UFC is the current click niche thing, or is it what he's saying? Is it that my top stars that people would pay to watch for the longest time are gone, and I can't make these new guys as big as they were?
I think that's a part of it. That's definitely a part of it. You can't make guys as big as they were. They're the next Rock, the next Austin. I mean, you know, John Cena is a great star. Don't get me wrong. I won't take one single thing away from him. You know, he worked for me once, and the minute he walked through my door, I knew that he was a great kid and that he was going to be a big deal in this business. I didn't realize how big at the time. But, you know, he's not on the level of a Rock. He's not on the level of an Austin in terms of really capturing the public imagination in that respect. And I think it's going to be a long time before we see somebody come along who can do that. And that's partly because of the way they have structured their business and the way television has evolved. The most successful guys in the recent era, with the exception of The Rock, were guys that came up in the tail end of the territories and had that night after night experience and had that, developed that polish that you don't see anymore in young talent. So, not being able to create those stars, I think, number one, there's got to be a lot of discussion in WWE right now about what to do about developmental. I know they're very happy with Florida Championship Wrestling, but that's not all that there should be. There needs to be a bigger structure than that. There needs to be a strong minor league if they're going to develop a strong major league. And I don't think that their minor league is strong enough. I don't think that it can develop guys the way they need to be developed. I think that, you mentioned UFC and that's effect on pay-per-views and so forth. And it's true. It's a glut of product in the market, whether it's UFC, whether it's TNA, whether it's WWE. How many pay-per-views can people buy? And they're not cheap. So, especially in this economy, people are going to cut back on things. And that's one thing that people are going to cut back on. The other thing is that back a few years ago, not very long ago, there was a place that we used to run shows at in this area called Good Time Employment. It was a big arcade, a gigantic indoor entertainment complex. And you used to be able to go there and watch any WWE pay-per-view. It was a $5 cover charge. You can go in there, you could have a beer, get some pizza, some wings, whatever, watch the pay-per-view, it's $5, and, you'd probably end up spending almost as much money as you would if you ordered it at home, but, you could go out there and watch with it, and they would get, when the product was hot, they would get a large group of people. There were times where WrestleMania, they'd have, 1,000, 1,400 people watching WrestleMania on the big screens in the building. There's no place in the Boston area to watch a pay-per-view like that anymore. There's plenty of places you can watch UFC, but no place you can watch a wrestling pay-per-view. The interest in the product has declined. And, the world changes. Everything changes. And, I think if they had less pay-per-views, they might draw more. If they were cheaper, they might draw more. Who knows? I think the biggest thing, and this is, ultimately, and it's the same thing with, why NXTW closed, the same thing. The bottom line at the end of the day is you're not selling what that many people want to buy. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason. And there can be 100 reasons. But at the end of the day, they're not selling what as many people want to buy, and they've got to look at the product and see how can we improve it and how can we make it hot enough that people are going to want to go out of their way to see it.
Got an email at radioandonlinewellofwrestling.com from Mike Ligori of Tampa, Florida, wants to know, I'm sure this is a hypothetical, but giving your knowledge of professional wrestling, how would you compare or market a star such as superstar Billy Graham to today's current market? Would superstar Graham work in the current WWE structure of promos written word for word, or would he thrive? Would he fail?
Boy, that's a very interesting question, because there's a lot of guys who were big stars in that era that wouldn't stand a chance today. I think Billy Graham, because he was so charismatic, I think he would have broken through. Same thing with Dusty Rhodes. They may not be the same type of performer. They may not have gotten over to the same level. But, you know, guys like that who have an innate charisma, and that's what Billy Graham had going for him more than anything else. It wasn't necessarily his work. And he had a great physique, and that was a, you know, that was a big selling point for him. But he had the kind of charisma that when he walked into a room, it could be pitch black and you'd have to reach for your sunglasses. He had that kind of charisma. And that's something you don't see a lot of today. You don't see a lot of guys like that in pro wrestling. I had Dutch Mantel on my show not long ago, and he was saying, you know, where are the Abdul the Butchers today? Where are the, where are guys like that, the real characters, you know, the, you know, King Kong Bundys and people of that nature? You don't see people like that anymore. Everybody looks like they just, you know, are a junior in college, and they look like they're just out of prep school or something. So, but to more specifically answer that question, how would you market somebody like that? I think that if you give them the stage, and even in a scripted environment, if you let them be themselves, talent and charisma tend to shine through, even in this environment. You know, many times guys with talent and charisma don't get a chance to develop because they're never given the stage. But if they were to give Billy Graham the stage, even in this era, I think he would get over to the same extent.
Question from our chat room. Mr. Goldberg, you mentioned the WWE developmental system. Do you think that WWE, since they destroyed the territorial system of the 80s, would be better to bring that back and have regional developmental promotions? Would that work or hurt them in the long run?
Well, I hope that someone from WWE is listening, because I'm going to tell you
that. That'd be awesome.
I think they, here's what I think that they ought to do. I think they should keep Florida Championship Wrestling as it is, and they should pick 3 to 4 areas, and they should take either an existing company or work with people that are in that area to create that company, and create several regional companies and prop them up via advertising. And what I mean by that very specifically is let's take New England Championship Wrestling as an example. If I could have gotten WWE to get me a time slot on a strong local TV station and have them support that by advertising on the show, like they buy an advertising contract as opposed to putting direct dollars into the company, so that the cost of being on TV is kind of knocked away. And it's just the production and it's just the operation and so forth. And if they had agents who would travel to each of these places on a rotating basis to kind of keep tabs on who was there, who was not there, sort of a pre-developmental system where you take the better companies, you invest a little bit in them, either via advertising or maybe even directly, direct dollars, and prop them up and make those companies viable in today's environment using the resources of a WWE. I think that would enhance the developmental system that they have now. I think it would be far more effective. They wouldn't have to get rid of FCW, but they could take the people that they thought had potential, or people that maybe they couldn't use anymore on the main roster, and send them to some of these places so that they could work with younger people and give them experience. Send some of the agents around and send some of the business people around to help those companies become viable. And I think that their business would benefit greatly from it. I think that given some time, and it would take time, that it would pay big dividends down the road. There would be a far greater interest in the product itself, in that genre of product, and I think that it would create more stars and give more people the opportunity to become very polished performers than the current system that they have in place.
As mentioned, Mr. Goldberg is not leaving professional wrestling 100%. He does have a very popular show called Mouthpiece Wrestling, which airs Saturday nights at 10 p.m. on AM 1510 WWNZN in Boston. You also mentioned some other stations to me earlier, and I didn't get a chance to write those down. Feel free to mention other stations. And I believe you can also listen to your show on a website. Is it mouthpieceboxing.com currently?
Yeah, there's actually a mouthpieceboxing.com works. There'll eventually be a mouthpieceradio.com, and that'll encompass everything. But the Mouthpiece Wrestling Show is actually part of a three-hour block of radio shows. There is a Mouthpiece Boxing Show, which was the original show that kicks everything off. Then that's Saturdays from 9 to 10. Then there's us, Mouthpiece Wrestling, from 10 to 11. And then there's Mouthpiece MMA from 11 to midnight and on Saturday nights, Eastern Time. And we're on in Boston on AM 1510, WWZN. We're on in Manchester, New Hampshire, and Nashua, New Hampshire, on WGAM and WGHM, 1250 and 900 AM in Manchester and Nashua, New Hampshire. We're on 1230 AM WARL in Providence, Rhode Island, and we're on AM 1490 WIFI in Elizabeth, New Jersey, which covers Atlantic City and Philadelphia. And I believe after the first year, we're going to have more stations to come, and they can listen live online at 1510thezone.com. Or mouthpieceboxing.com. I believe mouthpiecewrestling.com goes to the same address. So, check it out. We're actually on a little bit of a hiatus for this month and next month, but after the first year, we'll be back to a regular schedule. So.
Well, he will not be a stranger to our network. He will definitely be back, possibly on a monthly basis. We'll negotiate with his agents afterward. Thank you so much for taking time to be a part of our program this evening.
Guys, thank you so much for having me on. Again, if I knew I had to go out of business to be on here, I would have gone out of business a lot sooner.
Coming up after the break, former NWA World Tag Team Champion Vivacious Vito DiNucci will be joining us to address the interesting events overseas from Monday Night Raw and SmackDown. All on World of Wrestling Radio. We'll be back.
Do you have a business that you are looking to take online but have no idea what an HTML or a JPEG is? Do you currently have a website that is in need of an overhaul? Or do you have a website that needs updating but you don't have the time to do so? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then you need to check out wtrproductions.tk, where you can get quality web design and management at an affordable rate. Looking to get the lowdown on all the services we offer? Then shoot us off an email by checking out our contact section so that we can help you get started building your online home. WTR Productions. High quality work for an affordable rate. Built the way you want. Located at www.wtrproductions.tk.
Sports for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer.
as well. News articles and blogs from some of the best known experts we all today. And the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christine Hayes, Brett Derry.
Candace Michelle.
Christy Hemming.
Jay Lethal.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the $1 million Man.
Paul Hogan, the greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Booker Wickerman.
And tomorrow.
Peter Wolf and Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith.
Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling. Online. It's the thing that throws you. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
The evolution of online sports entertainment begins again on Sunday night when you step into the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio. Covering all the latest in the WWE, TNA, and the indie scene. Plus, providing you with the most comprehensive coverage of every WWE and TNA pay-per-view. Join Wrestle Talk Radio every Sunday night live only on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Passion. Maybe you're a geek, a wrestling fan, a sex enthusiast, or you just need something to do for the evening. Then come check out the Wild Talk Radio Network, providing you with the latest in online entertainment. Whether it's getting in the ring with Wrestle Talk Radio, or getting a little R-rated with CB Radio or anything goes, or whether you just want to play a game of Dungeons & Dragons with the geeks over to Talky Talk Live. All you gotta do is head on over to www.wildtalkradio.com and check out all of our daily programming. Wild Talk Radio Network. Come and get wild with us.
Quick message going to all the geeks out there. If you want to listen to three guys talk your language, tune in to Otaku Talk Live, Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. What? You expect me to be funny? We do that on the show! So tune in! Listen! I demand it.
Alright, this is the king of old school, Mr. Wrestling 3, a true legend in professional wrestling. Steve Carino, and if all those nicknames didn't really matter to you, it doesn't matter to many other people, because you're listening to the Online World of Wrestling Radio with Alan Wolch and Janiski.
And welcome back to Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by Kurt Hammett, Lars Ulrich, the unfortunately late bassist for the band. As a fan of the band, it's still hard to talk about the horrible tragedies that have happened to this band over the years. Some black ice overseas changed the band and brought you some very interesting stuff over the years. Their new album was our most recent, Death Magnetic, and we tag out the Spud guy, who is a Metallica nut, to bring in another Metallica person. I know he is, because I saw him at the St. Pete Times Forum for the St. Anger event that was opened by Godsmack. He is a former three-time NWA World Tag Team Champion, held the Pro Wrestling Fusion tag belts at NWA Florida for a little while. Is co-host of Between the Ropes, which can be heard in the Orlando area. However, there's some issues going on there.
No issues.
Oh, okay.
No but, issues whatsoever. Actually, it's all very, very good.
He is Vivacious Vito DiNucci joining us on the show.
What's up,
What happened? You're supposed to be on the air tonight. What happened? Can you address it?
I'll say this now. Here's the deal. As we sit here at 10:54 on Tuesday night, I couldn't tell you direct day, time, and all that kind of stuff when we'll be back on the air. It'll be shortly, but it will be back across town at 7:40.
Going back to 7:40. Cool.
Going back to 7:40, the blowtorch of a sports station in Orlando. That's a 50,000-watt station as opposed to ESPN 1080, which I think daytime peak cranks at about 20,000 watts. And when they power down at night because of dial location conflicts, I've been told that at certain times, particularly in the winter months, that it might blow out at about a whopping 1,200 watts or something after sundown. Yeah, the signal was wretched in the nighttime hours, particularly in the winter months. And long story short, Brian Fritz, the founder and longtime host, co-host, whatever you want to call him, of Between the Ropes, is actually, and it's going to be announced, I believe, tomorrow, but he's got new employment in the Orlando radio market. He's actually going back to the Clear Channel Castle.
Wow.
Yes, and I'll say it. I don't care what they're going to do. Fire me. I don't work for them. Brian is going to be a part of the new morning drive on-air team at 7:40. They went back to sports. They're back to doing sports format. And he and Orlando Sentinel columnist Mike Bianchi are going to be the two new hosts of the morning drive show on 7:40.
Well, good for him. Brian is very good people. I've met with him many a time at TNA wrestling events. And before I ever did this show, I'll openly admit, I listen to you guys, especially when Dickerman was involved too. I love listening to you guys because you had such great interviews, and I'm more than pleasantly happy that I was the first person to happen to email you. It's like, don't anything tonight? No, cool. Come on and talk wrestling. We're gonna get into WWE land after we went to TNA land. And, is this from his twit, Mace? Is this what Joey is sitting there not doing anything but new media? Came across from Joey Styles. What's the big deal about seeing old school WWE? It's on TNA, it's TV every week. It's called TNA, but it doesn't. little awkward there. He is hinting to the fact that this coming Monday, next Monday, when they come back to the U.S. after visiting the U.K. and other endeavors, we'll have an old school Monday Night Raw 3-hour event. For someone that's been in the business as long as you have been, not sure if it's been addressed recently on your program, but the concept of the guest host and now guest star being involved with an anonymous GM, can't we just get rid of this thing already? I mean, we had Pee Wee Herman on Long Island last week. Don't think anybody was in England last night. Maybe they appeared off camera, but can we just, like, stick? Are you the anonymous GM, Vito? Come on, admit it. You're him. Or is it Chris Nelson?
Nelson's not bright enough to do it, so eliminate that. That ain't gonna happen. Oh, whatever, dude. I love Chris. He's my brother. He's an idiot. No, you know what? I couldn't agree with you more. The guest host thing blows. I'm not a fan. The anonymous GM. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's very typical of what they do up there, and that is they'll pop something that if they were bright enough to keep it to a couple, 3 weeks, something like that, maybe even stretch it out to a month, you could probably keep people's attention, make it intriguing, make it something that had people still guessing. Now people are just pissed off by it. It just annoys them. There's no more intrigue and guessing as to who it is. I don't know of anybody with an IQ over 80 that still cares. But it is what it is. Now it's just become a really stupid little sidebar thing that is more annoying than anything. The Michael Cole heel commentator is annoying as hell. I have no problem with a heel color guy. I have absolute fundamental problems with a heel commentator. And the thing is, it's not like he's with a faction or part of a storyline. It's just all of a sudden, you know, nice, pleasant Michael Cole, because he got his ass kicked by Daniel Bryan, has decided that he's now a quote unquote bad guy. And it's stupid. I think it detracts from the product. And above all else, if you're going to have Michael Cole play a heel, if you're going to have a heel commentator, Michael Cole, really? He's the big tough bad guy commentator, huh? Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm quaking. My 4-year-old whipped Michael Cole's ass. Give me a break.
I think my 2-year-old can. Mace, we've addressed this on the show before and on Russell Talk Radio. Is there an end game to this, or is this still WWE writers stalling, going, okay, Rock can't do it, busy movie schedule. Austin can't do it, busy movie schedule. Some of these legend guys, the crowd may not even know who the heck they are. Let's just keep spinning wheels until we find somebody. Or are you along the lines of, you know, I'm sick of this, just get it over with, make it some guy sitting in the third row, congrats, you're the new GM of Raw.
Hell, I'll take the job if nobody else wants it. But yeah, I agree with Vito. It's boring. I'm getting annoyed every time I hear that friggin' email noise. And I'm so sick of Michael Cole reading off a script instead of a computer screen.
Yeah, which is not being hidden at all. Again, last night, for the fans who didn't watch the Manchester Raw, you can clearly see where the keyboard would be. Cole is sitting there with a nice little piece of 11x8 or whatever copy paper is. I'm just going, you know, my wife walked in going, see, he's supposed to be reading off a screen, right? Uh-huh. But with the script. So I was like, ah, you saw that. Cool. The past week's programming, SmackDown was here in the U.S. before everybody went over. I believe they were in Connecticut. Sorry, Linda, we live out of the States. We couldn't vote for you. So, Nexus invading SmackDown, finally, it took them a couple months ago to finally show up over there. Was weird this week because, as we saw last night, Wade Barrett had his big homecoming return. So, you had a Wade Barrett-less Nexus. Since you haven't been on the program before, I'll defer to you first, Vito. Overall feelings on the Nexus gimmick, and we've had a running pool on the show for the next few pay-per-views and the recap for fans what they are. To go into 2011, you've got the Royal Rumble, January 30th, Elimination Chambers, February 27th, or the last two events to get you to WrestleMania. Talk about Nexus overall, and we see full-fledged John Cena heel by WrestleMania. Pick a pay-per-view between now and then if he would be going full heel.
Man, in my gut, I don't think that he's going to go full-fledged heel. I think, as the story goes, depending on how far they want to take it along with Cena in the role that he's at, where he's having to kowtow to Wade Barrett and be a part of Nexus, I think it may get to where there's some shades of gray. There may be some deepening inferences that maybe he's leaning towards going that way, but I don't think you'll see a full-fledged heel turn out of him. As far as Nexus itself goes, it's been cyclical. It was interesting when they very first brought the whole Nexus concept out, and the rookies came out and they did the Nexus thing. It was interesting then. It got kind of stupid pretty fast, but I'll give them credit. The Cena inclusion and how that storyline's gone, and it made it relevant and entertaining again with that part of the storyline. Now they've got to where finally they're having some of the internal conflict within Nexus itself. I forget the names of the individual guys, but the black guy who's, you know, kind of on his own now, and he had
Otunga,
thank you. And so they got, you know, the internal conflict going there, and I mean, they can get a lot of mileage out of this, and I think they've done I think the WWE's done a hell of a job over the last year and a half to 2 years as far as their introduction and injection of young talent into their prime storylines. This was something that they have fought for years. They've avoided it like the plague. They've been a company that has been reliant on its older stars for the longest time, and they still are to a certain extent, but due to age and injury and retirements and things like that, they have been forced to, en masse, interject these younger guys into these storylines and build these guys in a very rapid fashion into characters that the fan base buys into. Sheamus is a great example of that, obviously. They did a great job of building Sheamus up very fast, making this guy a badass, making him legit in the people's eyes, so much so that now you've gotten to a point here in the last couple months where he doesn't have to be rolling with the title, and he's still legit. He can take losses, and he's still legit. It doesn't affect his – he's not a guy – they've elevated him to a point where his week-to-week status isn't affected by, you know, oh, did he take a pinfall loss, or what was the details of the loss? That really doesn't matter with him at this point. He's very established. They've done a great job. I think they're doing a nice job with these Nexus guys, particularly Barrett, of course. Barrett is the focal point of that group. He's a good guy with good size. He's got a good look. He's pretty good on the mic, particularly for a British guy. You know, a lot of times British guys don't go over well in the States because of the accent on the stick, but he does a very good job with it. He's getting better and better in the ring. The core group of Nexus, the kids in that group are definitely talented. And this storyline it's fantastic because it allows them to be in a primetime storyline, but the spotlight's not necessarily focusing on any one of them individually for a lengthy period of time where their current flaws might be exposed. So I think it's brilliant as far as introducing new younger talent into the company, continuing that trend, which they've done a lot of, you know, DiBiase and Cody and, you know, a lot of the kids on SmackDown. I think they're doing I think their gun has kind of been put to their head, and they've had to do it because of a lot of circumstances, but I think they're doing a great job of introducing new talent. I know you talked TNA stuff earlier, but the part that I think is ironic is TNA has been the company for several years now that the smart fan base of wrestling has always credited with. Oh, they've got the young talent, they've got the exciting talent, but they've done a piss poor job of getting that young talent over and making that young talent matter to wrestling fans in general. And here you see in the last year or so with the WWE, regardless of why they did it, they had to do it. They've done it, and they've done a pretty damn good job of getting this young talent over.
We witnessed on Monday Night Raw, once again, the Hart Dynasty leading to separation, and that leads to a chat room question from Jersey Girl. Wanted to know, what is your take, Vito, on the current WWE situation of doing away with what great tag teams they have? It seems to be, we've had this discussion here with Mace and with Spug, that the Usos, very good team that was developed in FCW. You have the Dude Busters who are just floating around in FCW, the former Lance Hoyt, now Vance Archer, and Curt Hawkins, another great team, kind of just sitting there. What do you make of all of this? And then we'll let Mace join in here too, because we're tag team fans, and it kind of sucks that teams like the Hart Dynasty are just the fodder for Michael Cole's haha funny.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously anybody that knows me or anything about me knows that I'm a tag team worker primarily. I mean, I've worked a lot of singles in my time, but my 15 minutes, of course, has been as a tag team wrestler, and I'm a huge fan of the craft. This isn't a new phenomenon with the WWE. This has been going on for a long, long time. They, for all intents and purposes, wrote off tag team wrestling being of any level of importance probably, six, seven years ago, really. There's been a couple of times in that time period that it has had a very brief resurgence, and there's been a storyline that has been tag team centered that has mattered. But it's usually been when they've taken a couple of their, over singles guys, put them together in a team and conjured up a storyline that, yeah, was based around the tag team, but it was only focused on because it involved single stars that were put together in tag teams. The company, I think they're missing the boat. And I don't care what evidence anybody from Titanland wanted to put in front of me to say to the contrary, I disagree 100% that there is not a viable market for tag team wrestling, both on house shows, on TV, on pay-per-view. I don't care where it is. I see it firsthand. House shows in particular are a great place to gauge the reaction of tag teams and the popularity that's still there. If you've got a good tag team, then if they know how to work, it's very easy for them to really connect with the crowd, heel or baby. It doesn't matter. Crowds react well to tag teams, and tag team matches themselves lend themselves, A, to good crowd interaction, B, they lend themselves, particularly in the case of a good working heel team, to a lot of just blatant, the fans at home watching on TV, get to see blatant cheating, quote unquote, going on.
Something you'd never do.
No. But, but that's part of what draws the reaction. It's part of what draws the fans in and gets them to invest in the match, in the team, and, you know, in the product. And I think Vince and company have completely lost sight of that. And it's really a shame because it's a long-standing, fantastic part of wrestling. You go to any of the better indie shows that are out there that utilize good tag teams, not just a couple of schmucks that you know, would like to be something so they get together and tag. You do that, you go watch good tag teams work, and you see. I'm not bragging, it's fact. You know, Nelson and I, we've had a relatively busy year for us. We've worked probably on average about, once or twice a month for most of 2010. But I'm going to tell you right now, dude, when we were going full-time and we were wrestling 3-4 days a week, every week, we were on the road all the time doing 200-plus shows a year, I was in the gym a lot. Nelson was never in the gym, but, we were practicing, we were at it, we were working, it was our craft. I'll be the first one to tell you, when we work a show now, dude, I don't go practice anywhere in the ring anymore. I get loose, I stretch, I stay in the gym enough to where I'm not going to hurt myself. But I'm going to tell you right now, any show we go on, we're going to get as good, if not better, a reaction than any individual or other team on that show, period. It's going to be done because we know how to work. We know how to work not only a match, we know how to work the crowd. And we know how to get the crowd involved and invested into our match. We've been on so many shows where the crowd is dead to everything. And no offense to these younger guys that come out and they want to run spot. But when you've got the bad case of indie face and you don't know how to, like, register on your face what's going on with the match because you're too busy going through the Rolodex in your mind of the 87,000 spots you've got called for the match, you don't get the crowd involved. And the crowd, in spite of the fact that you're putting on an athletic display that's amazing, the crowd doesn't give a damn because you've done nothing to draw them in. They're just watching a really cool back and forth contest of guys doing some really neat athletic things, but that you haven't given them reason to care. Nelson and I'm here to tell you, we don't do a damn thing now. We give you so much gaga, it's not even funny. We still bump and sell and make guys look good because that's how we were trained. That's what we do. But we're not doing anything amazing out there. We just go out, we entertain, but we get the crowd involved and we make them care whether they love us or whether they hate us. And that is what's cool about tag team wrestling, and that's why McMahon I say McMahon, the reality of it, I don't know how much say Vince has on a week-to-week basis anymore about the product. I really don't. But whoever's making the decisions up there, they're missing the boat, because tag team wrestling is something that the fans still love. It still works. And I think, personally, that it's an opportunity to get sometimes lethargic crowds involved, because it's a much easier match to showcase, you know, good working heels and really get crowds worked up. But they don't see it that way.
Well, to me, because this is kind of, we mentioned this with Sheldon Goldberg earlier on, is this something that they should be addressing in developmental? Is this just Stephanie Levesque and Gearwitz and whoever else is around, Michael Hayes? I mean, you've got a roster there, Mace. Just in their office alone, you've got a tag team legend in Arn Anderson, a tag team legend of Michael Hayes. Mike Rotunda was a part of the Money Incorporated with Ted DiBiase. You've got Ricky Steamboat, who, even though he's a great sales worker, was involved with Jay Youngblood in the 80s. Is this just WWE's lack of FCW getting teams together? Or, as Vito said, is this just lack of creative sitting there going, no, developmental, yeah, we'll just throw it through. Cody, congrats, your tag team.
Pretty much a factor of all that, to be honest. Sort of one of the other things that I noticed has been left out is that the mentality of a lot of people coming up in wrestling today, I saw it myself coming up through the indies here in Australia, not everybody is willing to stick with a tag team. They're all about, you know, getting their character over, getting themselves over, getting themselves to the main event so they can become the big time champ of the Federation. Not many people are willing to sit back and go, you know what, we're a team. We're going to stick that out for as long as possible. And then, you know, we might try a singles run, and then if that doesn't work, we go back to the tag team. You know, everybody's too quick to go to be the single star instead of trying to get a tag team over, which I think's a big thing missing in the mentality of a lot of wrestlers, especially on the indie scene.
Well, is that WWE's creative decision to do that to these kids, or is it just, you know, they look at the retrospective DVDs of someone like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and don't see, hey, you know, Bret wasn't exactly a world champ overnight. Neither was Shawn. They both did their butts in tag teams for years. Or is it just like you said, it's the kids today that are just sitting there going, I want to be world champ. Tag belts mean nothing. Must have world title belt. Get on video game cover. Women will like me.
Pretty much. You know, you don't see many people referring back to the days of the Rockers with Jannetty and Michaels. You know, all you hear is Shawn Michaels, the great former world heavyweight champion. It's starting to be in, you know, every place seems to copy the WWE. You know, that when WWE had commissioners, everywhere had commissioners. When the general managers came along, everywhere had general managers, and then consultants, and then this and that. You know, same goes with how the places are being booked. Tag team wrestling's on a decline in the WWE. All right, well, we're not going to book tag team wrestling in the indie shows. Yet some of the best matches I have seen have been tag team matches, because there's a lot more psychology to it. There's, you know, as Vito was saying, you know, a lot more expression in people's faces, because you have that time to get the crowd more involved, as opposed to a singles match.
Yeah, and we've had folks on this show, including Dark City Fight Club, who Vito's been in the ring with. We had superstar Sean Davis on recently, part of the Heartbreak Express, another well-renowned tag team, be it here in Florida, be it on the indies. You've got teams on the indies. You've got teams in Ring of Honor like the Briscoes, who are phenomenal. You've got Kenny King and Rhett Titus out there, the All Night Express. On different occasions, you've seen Eric Stevens, Roderick Strong together. You've seen Joey Ryan in forms of tag teams. So, I mean, for fans that are sitting there going, yeah, but they're all these great teams. It's only, as Mace just outlined, it's only as good as what creative is sitting there doing. And as we mentioned with Sheldon Goldberg, to go back to our friends at Kayfabe Commentaries, if you want to get an interesting DVD, get Superstar Billy Graham's timeline of WWF 1977-78, He had mentioned even during the interview with Sean Oliver that at one point the WWF, I think I got my three W's out, actually their belts were somewhat retired. So, and is that something to either one of you we may possibly see soon? I mean, those action figure belts they got on the guys now aren't exactly, you know, selling in the toy stores.
Hey, actually, you mentioned superstar Sean Davis. Let me interrupt. I don't know if you read this or not. They were working I'm understanding they wrestled tonight over in Tampa, I believe, against the Highwaymen in a ASW tag title match. Sean on his Facebook posted just a little while ago. Here, I'll read it. Well, it's been a great 8-year run for the Heartbreak Express, but it looks like it's time we officially part ways. Phil's heart isn't into wrestling anymore, and I can't force him to continue. So as of now, the Heartbreak Express are officially retired as a team. We lasted longer than most and accomplished a lot. Here's to the good times.
Oh, that totally sucks.
Yeah. We were on a show with them a month or so ago and saw the guys, and Phil, I've noticed progressively, didn't look that into it.
They've been at all star wrestling events on Friday nights. I've seen the Davis twins together, and they kind of just look like, okay, we're here to watch, not interested, and that's a real shame. Coming out of this tape Monday Night Raw, the Goldust DiBiase feud seems to keep going. Now apparently Oksana has been outed as what she is, a gold digger from overseas. Is this a feud that could possibly make it as far as Royal Rumble, or is this a feud that nobody seems to care about except for creative?
So this would be creative going, yay, let's do this angle, and everybody else is like, yeah, and?
Well, there's also Dustin Rhodes also does, I believe he has a biography coming out in the next couple months, so that could also lead to the push, maybe, maybe not. And Dustin is having fun with it, it's obvious to see. And the guy can still go, which I'm kind of glad to see. It's amazing to see that character has gone on as long as it has. And looking back to him back in the early 90s when he came in with Marlena, just to say, would you honestly have thought of, you know, back when he debuted that you'd be sitting here in 2010 going, hey, Goldust, cool, you're still here?
No. I've probably thought at 5 or 6 different times in the last 15 to 20 years that he was done. I know Dustin pretty well, and this is a guy who's he's been through some serious ups and downs personally. There's been numerous times I didn't think he was gonna, you know, be back in the business in any relevant fashion. And I'll tell you, God bless certain owners of pro wrestling companies that give second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth chances. And he's making the most of it. He's doing a great job. He's in fantastic shape, best shape he's been in years. And doing a really nice job. And he still can go out there and do everything he ever did. And that's amazing, because he's been at it a long time.
Off of both SmackDown and Raw, we've set up a couple more matches for the Miami-based Survivor Series, which our colleague Jim Barcelone will probably be attending. And if I play my cards right, the following Tuesday he'll be visiting with us. Right now is currently Randy Orton defending the world title versus Wade Barrett, with Marky Mark himself as the referee. Now, here's what came out of Monday Night Raw last night, and stay with me because the GM typed this out or whatever, that apparently now Survivor Series main event match is pin or submission, and the Nexus is banned. And as mentioned, and we're not going to go match for match, but mentioned, seen of the refs and threatened, Barrett, I don't win the belt, you're fired, I win the belt, you stay in it, you're not Nexus, and it was kind of weird to hear Cena last night reference his past as what variations of characters. At live events, it seems the crowd is still 50-50, maybe 60-40, heel face. At any point, if you're seeing, I know the merchandise dollars are coming in like crazy with that god-awful Los Angeles Lakers basketball-looking shirt he's got now, but he's been baby for, I lost track, 5, 6 years now. I think it was WrestleMania 20, maybe 8 years now, WrestleMania 20, he was kind of a face. Is there at any point that he may turn to creative and go, you know what, I think a heel run may be good, or do you honestly think, in your opinion, he's fine with this, you know, you love me great, you hate me great type thing?
I'm going to go with John Cena sitting there looking up Vince McMahon going, me monkey want banana.
I like that one.
Because seriously, Vince is standing over top of him going, dance, monkey dance.
Well,
I don't think Cena has any input.
This is Levesque doing that one, sitting there going, dance until my husband's knee gets better, you punk.
Yeah, that too.
And we're only making fun of Triple H because Spug is not here to defend his man crush. The other setup, world title, we can call it the World Heavyweight Belt. Ray Ray's not carrying it around his ankles anymore. Kane taking on the Rated R Superstar Edge, and for the third pay-per-view in a row, we will see Le Cool versus Natty Neidhart. We know our disdain for Le Cool, but you may have a different view on him, Vito. Love or hate Le Cool, and why? I mean, as wrestlers, I don't mean as eye candy.
They're nothing special, dude. I mean, you know, whatever. They, you know, I say this about the WWE Diva Division. For the most part, they're really damn hot. And as far as their workability goes, you know, none of them really impress me at this point. They've gotten to the point where it's basically a bunch of chicks that could absolutely be in Playboy or Penthouse and nobody would think a thing of it other than, wow, they're hot. But the workers in that group are all pretty much gone. You know, there's a few of them I give credit for trying. You know, Gail Kim can work, but they don't use Gail in any meaningful role. She's just kind of there. I'm surprised she's still under contract, to be honest with you. But yeah, none of them really impress me. The only purpose they serve, in my opinion, is that, yeah, they look really good. And as a card-carrying straight man, I appreciate that. But the reality of it is I'm not impressed by neither of the Divas divisions. But to be honest with you, I like the work in the TNA division better, but that's a very hollow endorsement. It's kind of like the lesser of two evils. You know, I'm a big Victoria/Tara fan, love her work. She's in TNA, so they get the nod in my opinion, but I think both divisions are pretty weak. They've gone the route of eye candy, and the girls, none of them are very good workers. Lay cool, you know, okay, whatever. I mean, I give credit that you see a lot of them, they're trying. They're trying, and we may get a few of them to do what Trish Stratus did several years ago, which was she came in as eye candy and worked her ass off and actually became pretty damn good in the ring. And
do you think someone like Natty would have fit better in that era of the Trish Stratus, the Lita, the Ivory, Molly Holly?
Oh, absolutely.
Victoria.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No doubt about it. And Natty, you can see, obviously, she's got the lineage, and she's, you know, Natty's attractive. She's a good-looking girl, but she's athletic. And you can see that it's there. And, yeah, she's one that I think definitely would have fit better than now. I'm not saying none of the girls are – it's not that they're not trying, because I think several of them are. They're trying to get better. And eventually it may pay off. But right now what I see for the most part is pretty unimpressive.
We've seen the emergence once again of Alberto Del Rio and his annoying ring announcer. Is this push just coming to an end fast, Mace, or was this something that was set just for Ray to come back and unfortunately leave again? And do we see the Del Rio character the way he is, being a JBL DiBiase-like character? Does this thing Now that we've seen it for a little bit and seen him work other folks like Edge, be a part of matches, including the one against Nexus on SmackDown, does this character have legs, or is he fizzled out by even by WrestleMania?
I'll be honest with you, Alan. I'm actually surprised if I can get past the opening intro of SmackDown these days.
Ooh.
So I can't really tell you because I don't really watch it anymore. I record it, and then a couple of days later, I'm like, should I watch SmackDown? We got WTR tomorrow. Delete.
Well, I'll pose the question to you as well, Vito. And he, the first moments he came on, the first flash out of my mind was, hey, they took JBL's gimmick and made him Mexican. That's basically what it is. He's a very good worker. For fans that aren't aware of it, he wrestled as Dos Caras as a masked performer. So for a guy that's been a masked performer for a long time, the character seems to get over. He's got the charisma to get it over, but is it creatively a character that has legs, unlike a Shore character that Rob Echoes has been strapped with?
I don't know. You know, my take is that if you got somebody who's well-rounded, and the charisma is such a huge part of it, you know, and that there's a lot of guys out there. I'll give you a good example. Daniel Bryan, you know, Bryan Danielson. Obviously, this guy can work circles around 99.2% of the population that calls itself professional wrestlers today. He's a fantastic worker. Now, let me ask you, take aside his firing, and much like the Matt Hardy firing a few years back, I think there's a lot of people who question whether that was a real firing or not. I think it probably was just by the fact that he was out working indies, but who knows. But whether it was a real firing or not, but his firing over his aggressive actions during the Nexus beatdown when that angle first got started, take that out of play. Do you think the crowd gives a rip about Daniel Bryan?
It's a mixed bag. I think it's a mixed bag. I think they're more caring because of Michael Cole getting on the mic. The ones that are listening at home, they're more, I mean, I as a fan, Mace has mentioned it, Spug has mentioned it. Before CM Punk was injured, we were all sitting there as Mark's going, people inside the business were going, cool, we're going to get possibly at Mania, CM Punk versus Bryan Danielson, maybe even throw low-key Caval in there. We're just sitting there, cool, and then unfortunately hip injury puts Punk off to the side. So, I mean, we debated it on here. We're kind of hoping we would get to see an old Saturday Night's Main Event type situation of Daniel Bryan beating somebody and getting a couple minutes alone with Michael Cole was the situation, like the old get Bobby Heenan for a couple minutes thing.
Yeah, my thing with it, bottom line, if your character, if the person doing the character's got natural charisma, and you've either got that or you don't, you know, that's something you can't coach personality per se. You either have it or you don't. A lot of people in the business like to call it ring presence. You know, there's people that just get in there and you look and seem like you belong there. You have presence. And you know, the guys that can talk a little bit, or a lot of bit for that matter, it helps your cause in this day and age. So I think anytime you get a person who's got some charisma, they can make a character, even if it's not a great character, they can make it work. You know, granted, depending on the quality of the character, you may or may not get it over for long. I mean, it's tough to say, but you know, I think a charismatic performer can get just about any character over for a little while. But let's be honest, the WWE is not a company that has traditionally gone out of their way to push minority characters. I don't care if they're Hispanic, Black, Indian, Asian, it doesn't matter. They typically, any pushes for minority characters in WWE land have typically been pretty short-lived.
Or as Intruso once said, or Bischoff once said, why are you guys wearing that mask? I can't see your face.
Yeah, profound. Yeah. I'm a huge Vince Russo fan, by the way.
Yeah.
Or
obvious in more ways than one. One of the things to come out of this past week overseas is come in today from a live event in London, England, that William Regal has apparently announced to the audience that the ongoing British tour will be his last, because it looks like he is going to be retiring soon. For fans that aren't aware of it, who didn't read his book, Walking the Golden Mile, which is an excellent book if you're ever sitting and you need to read something in a plane or a train somewhere, it's phenomenal, that he started wrestling at the age of 15 on the carnival circuit overseas and had worked for WCW back in the day. Parted with them, came to WWE, where he was the on-stage commissioner, was King of the Ring, and other stuff. And it's amazing. It's weird to say that someone is wrestling for 27 years, has won more than 60 world titles, even though he recently signed a 42-month-long contract renewal with WWE, puts him over to 2014. To me, since you are on the international scene doing from Australia and you do trade DVDs and watch stuff all around, the overall effect of William Regal, and you see it in certain aspects with Daniel Bryan, the character is learning from him, because to a degree he did at the Shawn Michaels Academy and other stuff, but Regal's overlasting feel to wrestling itself and WWE, positive, negative, in the middle?
Personally, I'd be sad to see him go. He's been one of the best technical wrestlers of the past 20-odd years. You know, he's been with the company 27 years, I believe it was. You know, and a guy with that type of skill is always going to be missed by somebody like myself who likes great, pure wrestling matches. But if he's going over... Like, if he's going to leave the company, but at the same time turn around and go, you know what, here's Daniel Bryan, he's the next best technical guy in the business, please support him, then that's going to be a great endorsement for him.
Overall thoughts on William Regal, Vito, and could you possibly see him sticking around in a producer role or helping out at FCW, or possibly setting up a second territorial thing, getting back in bed with Ohio Valley Wrestling, or setting something else up?
I could see any of the above. Obviously, he is a wealth of knowledge. He's a guy who carries insane amounts of respect in the back from the boys, young and old. A phenomenal technical wrestler, but also a legitimate tough guy. He is, you know, much, much like another one of my favorites, Fit Finlay. He's a guy who has frequently been kept around for his ability to keep order in the ring and out of the ring. He's a guy that was known to be put in matches with guys that were getting a bit out of line and do what had to be done, go in and rough guys up a little bit, teach them a lesson when they needed to be taught. And he's a great asset to any company. Seems to have his personal issues behind him. He's a guy who I would have a tough time believing they'd let him go altogether. I got to believe there's going to be a place at the table for a guy like Regal.
WTR on Sundays did a roundtable on Hall of Fame, which is coming soon to a venue in Atlanta near you. My personal vote, Scott Hudson, but hey, I don't have one. April 3rd, 2011 in the Georgia Dome is WrestleMania 27. Wow, it's weird to say that. And tickets do go on sale this week. I believe it's also in a pre-buy thing if you're a friend of theirs on the Facebook and other endeavors. Here's your pricing, kids. And we know Spug is saying he's going, and we wish him luck getting tickets. Like I said, these numbers, I'm just sitting there going, damn. 25, 50, 75, 100, 150, 250, 850, which gets you a take-home commemorative chair. And if you're sitting in the first two rows, you are shelling out Spike Lee, New York Knicks, courtside money. You're shelling out $1,000, including your take-home commemorative chair. When Mania was here in the Orlando area, did you and your crew from BTR attend at all, or were involved in any of the goings-on with Mania?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, we were all over that. We had a very interactive relationship with the company at that time, and that was at a time there were still a few more people in place that I had dealt with directly. I worked, you know, in my career, particularly several years ago, I did a lot of time with the WWE as far as dark matches, syndicated television. So we knew quite a few people then. So that has always been a nice caveat for the Between the Ropes show, is my relationship with the WWE and the people that I know up there, and a lot of them were still in place at that time. We had a lot of access to a lot of people during Mania, and we were there and fully credentialed and had a lot of access and really enjoyed it. It was a great time. They treated us well, just opened the doors to us and gave us whatever we needed. So that was a great time.
Well, to you and then to Mace, the dollar figures that were just shelled out, they don't compare to what the NFL asks you to chunk down for a Super Bowl event, mm-hmm. but for a venue the size of Georgia Dome, which I think for football, for the Falcons, seats 60, 70, they could possibly pack 80 into here. I know WCW and its hype, but they're in the Hogan Goldberg era, got 40 in there. With the economy being the way it is it just that no matter what, it's an instant sellout for Mania, or do you see them possibly? Because they had a little issue with the Orlando event trying to fill some seats here, but
not much. I mean, that was a big, big venue, man. I mean, what 70 something thousand, I think, is what they got in there.
Yeah, and some folks were set on fire, so not by choice. But I mean,
I don't know what that has to do with the ticket prices, but okay.
I know they definitely got their ticket price back, their ticket money back in lawsuits. But
well, hey, man, you talk about taking some memories from the show with you. There you go.
Exactly. To you then, the Mace. Too much
no.
on the pricing here. Or is this average? This is what you're going to get no matter where Mania is, even if it's a Madison Square Garden for WrestleMania 30.
I did Mania 20 in New York at the Garden and saw that firsthand, and I, you know, did the Orlando show. I mean, it is what it is. They'll do fine. They'll sell their tickets. They'll sell it out. It's the Super Bowl of wrestling, and fans still treat it as such. You know, it's great, man. They'll do fine. I mean, yeah, is it a little expensive in this economy? You know, let's face it, a lot of wrestling fans aren't the most affluent folks in the world. Would it be nice to see them maybe dial the price down a little bit? But, you know, hey, it's all good. And they'll sell it out. They'll do fine. It's a big, big event. The prices are a little high, but they're not outlandish considering what it is.
So if you could come to the country, Mace, and go with Spug, would you go, or would you just go, I'm finding a local bar and I'm watching it on pay-per-view?
If I had the money to fly up there and go with Spug, I tell you what, we'd go to the show and then hit the bar and get absolutely shit-faced. But that's just me and Spug. To be honest, the prices you described are not too far removed from what we're paying here in Australia for a house show. You know, we're paying minimum of 50, then 75, then 150, and then I think floor seats within the first six or seven rows or something along the lines of $400. So, you know, to me it's not much different. The only difference being you're paying a bit more for the floor seats because it is WrestleMania. And, yeah, they'll get the numbers, like, to the point where they're going to pack it out, but it's going to take a little bit. And, yeah, poor Spug, I hope he has a baseball bat ready to beat off other people so he can get some decent seats.
We mentioned Hall of Fame here, and the rumors going around, Vito, is this is going to be a very WCW-heavy event. If you could pick four or five folks that you've either dealt with in your career wrestling in WCW in dark situations or just as a fan, the obvious names that people have been throwing, they threw Goldberg for some reason, Sting, Luger, the Horsemen in any form or fashion. But if you could give four or five, that would be excellent for us.
Luger's a good possibility because of the fact that he was a big deal in the NWA and WCW, you know, in Florida wrestling, you know, and also, but then the fact is he's got those WWE ties as well. He worked for Vince at one point up in Titanland, so he's a possibility. Sting, obviously, to me, is a no-brainer, but again, what is his contract status going to be with TNA at that time? Vince is not a fan of, inducting people that are still active for the competition. So if Sting, I'm not sure what and when his contract status is. If he's available, I think that's a no-brainer. You got to do it. I look at maybe this is where we see the balance of the Horsemen. Maybe this is where we finally see Tully, Arn, Barry Windham, see those guys go in, get their due. Would love to see that. It's long overdue. All three of those guys are off the top of my head are overdue for induction. J.J. Dillon should be with them, but my recollection is that there's heat with J.J. and Vince and Titanland and all that kind of thing. You know, other WCW-based guys, you know, gosh, I don't know. Several of them are active. I mean, you know, take a guy... probably still too recent to the business. He's not under contract anybody now. But, you know, a guy like Booker T. You got to think there's probably a place in the Hall of Fame for Booker T. at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Probably
so no Ding Dongs or the Monkees or
no. Vader. Maybe a guy like Vader. You know, I don't know. He's a possibility. It's kind of a long shot, but. You know, I mean, there's a myriad of people that you could go with, but you got to remember, this is a very political thing, and Vince, even though he owns the tapes, the libraries, the name, the whole nine yards, Vince still treats the whole WCW brand and consequently the guys that work for WCW and never work for him like the proverbial stepchildren.
Which sucks ass completely.
Come on, you guys, you missed the biggest attraction for the Hall of Fame, come on. WCW's greatest wrestler ever, the Shockmaster.
We're going to get Lasertron. Lasertron and Boogie Woogie. They're not, you know, they're
Rockin'
not.
Man.
You know, I dropped the NWA World Tag Titles one time to Glacier. I mean, put Glacier in.
Oh, wow. It's a name out of the past.
Come on,
thank
I
you
like
so much. Thank you so much for stopping by tonight, Vito. We hope to do it again soon in the near future.
Absolutely, brother. Enjoyed it, man. Had a good time. Mace, be good. Take it easy, bud.
You too, bro. All
right. That is Vito DiNucci of the Heavenly Bodies. Definitely look on the indie scene for those gentlemen. They may be coming to an arena near you. Speaking of arena near you, we had tried through the folks of Coliseum Championship Wrestling to have another guest on tonight, but due to late scheduling issues, weren't able to do it. Tomorrow night, if you live in the Evansville area, the Evansville Memorial Coliseum, which was the homestay for the USWA back in the day, if you don't believe me, read Mick Foley's first book. This tomorrow evening, their event starts with a meet and greet at 6 to 7:30. It is a Legends of Wrestling event. The Memorial Coliseum is at 300 Court Street. All tickets are $15. As mentioned on Monday Night Raw last night, Jerry the King Lawler was... supposed to be over seas. Not really, because he's supposed to work the two events we're going to talk about, but due to an injury, possible staph infection issue, he will not be appearing at the event. However, here's some of the folks that will be there, and we will try to get these folks in the near future. Brian Christopher, Bushwagger Luke, the original PG-13, which is Jamie Dundee and Wolfie D. Tracy Smothers, Ricky and Robert, that's right, a Rock and Roll Express together again. Dirty Dutch Mantel, who will be on the show in the near future. The crazy man that is Madman Pondo, Mitch Ryder, T Tough Tony, Damage Incorporated will be there. If you live in Monroe City, Indiana, there will be a main event championship wrestling event at the Blue Jean Center, and you can go to mecwwrestling.com to check out all the locations for that. Doors are at 6, Bella's at 7. The original match was supposed to be to sell out Tracy Smothers taking on Jerry King Lawler, wherever mentioned due to injury. He is sending his one and only son, Brian Christopher, in. The semi-main event is the Bad Boys, Jason Briley and Chris Thomas. Love Jason, death, known him for years. Taking on the Natural Chase Stevens, JD Maverick taking on Rudy Switchblade. Tony Kazina, who's been in some Jeff Peterson Memorial Cups, and we'll have news on the JPC in the next week or so. It will be back this December, taking on the Metal Master. Marvelous Mitch Ryder taking on the Real Deal, Derek Neal. Shank Barzini taking on Fireball Roberts. Matt Boyce taking on Shane Smalls. Bushwhacker Luke will be signing autographs. Tickets are $15 for adults. Kids 5 and under are $5. For that event, there is no reserve seating, so it is first come, first serve with that. We want to congratulate WSU, who Sean McCaffrey was on last week, toting their iPay-per-view event, which was a success. You can still go to GoFightLive.tv to check that out. If you did not watch the event, Amber defeated Brittany Force. Melissa Coates joined the Cosmo Club, the dreaded group headed by Rick Cataldo and Brittany Savage. She defeated Jennifer Cruz. Ms. Savage did retain her championship, defeating Sassy Stephanie. Sassy Stephanie actually had the match won, but the rest of the Cosmo Club distracted the referee. Melissa Coates snuck in, hit Steph with the choke slam, took her out. We have new WSU Tag Team Champions, the Bell Saints. Miss San Antonio and Marty Bell, Tina San Antonio upset Jana and Cindy Rogers, and even WSU fans are touting it as the biggest upset possibly in the company's history. Rogers and Jana actually apparently got it with a shoving match, indicating problems between the two Cosmo members. The ODB made her debut, defeating Portia Perez. Rain, in her quest to get the WSU Championship, defeated Jamila Kraft. In an uncensored rules match, Jessica Havoc took out Primetime Amy Lee. And remember that Jessica did demand this match, looking to prove that she was the baddest one in WSU. And Amy Lee paid tribute to the legendary Luna Vachon, who is announced to be the first member of the 2011 WSU Hall of Fame. Another debut, Serena Deeb defeated Tracy Brooks, thanks to the interference of Amber. Before this match, Serena actually said she was sick of the fans and was here for herself. She doesn't care about the fans and only cares about being the champion. She's sick and tired of hearing about Mercedes Martinez, the champ, and wasting her time and making it clear that she was only there for the belt. The newly sanctioned WSU All Guts No Glory Championship was defended by Angel Orsini, defeating the icon of WSU, Miss Alicia, who has a shoot interview available through WSUWrestling.com. Check that out. She was a great interview when she was here with us. And Mercedes Martinez did defend and retain, once again, her championship. She defeated former ECW, and WWE star Jazz. The match was seen to be believed that number one contender Rain did come out, challenged Mercedes to an I Quit match, which I believe is on a DVD release that will be coming soon. And this is a part of the show where we get to say, I'm lucky to have this job because I get to talk wrestling, like Sheldon Goldberg said. We're lucky we get to do this for fun. And there's some other nice folks on this network that do this for fun as well, including Mace, who is part of a very nice show on this network called Utaku Talk Live, which is with himself, which is with the Spud guy, and the end-all, be-all of the network, the Omega. And I believe you guys are back this week. Is that correct, Mace? The hiatus is over.
Yes, the hiatus is over. The geeks are returning to the airwaves tomorrow night with Otaku Talk Live. As usual, I have no idea what we're going to talk about. I know we're going to probably cover some geek news and then probably BS up a storm. So go on over to wildtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern Time tomorrow night and you'll hear myself, the Spud Guy, and the be-all, end-all of the Wild Talk Radio Network, the Omega.
Alright, now this is the part where Sir Rockin' gets on a headset and tells me the real fun stuff. Is there an Anything Goes Thursday night?
No Anything Goes this week, but you go to CindySin.com or Facebook.com/CindySin for emails and questions you may have for her. And while I'm plugging things, check out www.wildparkradio.com/Russellbuck. That's what we're calling it, Russellbuck. Check it out. Fun stuff.
Russellbuck. Interesting. Russellbuck. Most interesting. Am I allowed to mention the Friday night show? Is he in good standing with the company?
Listen to Nick do Running the Ropes and some guy named Maverick. 6 p.m. Eastern on wildtalkradio.com.
Alright, and you do have Saturday, 9 o'clock, the TD Top 20 Country Countdown, which is hosted by the Trey Dog. Not a country fan, but hey, if the guy's getting listeners, I'm all for it. This week on the CB radio with yourself, the Godfather, and the Subway guy, what do we got? I know it was partying like it was 1999 last week. What do you guys got in store now?
Last week we told you everything that was good about 1999 and everything that was bad. We played music, we played kind of movies and all that fun stuff. This week, who the hell knows? We'll figure out something by Saturday. Where we'll go on around, go on the air and, well, BS it. That's what we do. CB Radio, midnight-ish on Wild Talk Radio.
And don't forget Sunday night, due to no pay-per-view, they will be on at 10 p.m. Eastern, Wrestle Talk Radio with Bug, with Mace, with Omega, possibly Will, Sir Rockin being the board master himself.
Can I jump in?
And, of course, Tim Stein. Jump.
Yes.
Jump. Jump, monkey, jump.
No, you will jump. Anyway.
Okay.
This Sunday night, WTR may just drive you stone cold crazy.
Ooh. Interesting.
Now it's Dash and Buck.
Yes, pitch your blog, man. You have a following, and we like to have you talk about it. Podcast, sorry. Not 100% hip with the lingo, so to speak.
Yes, well, if you like your comic books, whether they be Marvel, DC, or one of the miscellaneous independent groups, such as the Great Zinescope Entertainment, you would like to tune in to Bashing the Books, which should hopefully be up before Sunday. I have no set schedule as to when it goes up. It usually goes up somewhere between Friday and Sunday over at wildtalkradio.com. If you like to hear an Australian voice for close to an hour, then you'll enjoy the show. So I go through the latest and somewhat greatest of the new batch of comics that have hit store shelves. Give you my opinions and slight recommendations on the books, and if you wish to go and buy them, then you go and take the money out of your own pocket. Stop taking it out of mine.
A fun night had by all, as mentioned, thanks to Sheldon Goldberg for joining us, Vito Zanucci for taking time out, the Bug Guy, we wish him a better stomach, Mace, the Rockin', the folks of Metallica for bringing us their music. And what better way to go out? All I Want to Wrestle on the Radio. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.